Breaking in the Saturday night special, nah. Downtown blades Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Justice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos tread 5 or 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone. Santa Clara and a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by 4 police cruisers, while 2 pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops, where they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, but somewhere, someone's getting arrested for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown in downtown. And everywhere, 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 blessings going down for being brown in downtown.
And that was Guido Serpentino. Today's a Cholos. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can call in, and that's going to be an option for you for the next 3.5 hours. Got some interesting guests and co-hosts, and who knows, perhaps other callers too. The call-in number is 831-427-3772. Again, 831-427-FRSC. After all, we are Free Radio Santa Cruz, so that's the number to call. You can also jump on the chat room if you can't get through on the phone or you prefer not to. That's www.pagesincolor.com, and I'll be checking the chat room, I promise, I really promise, quite regularly. I don't see anybody on it but me right now, but as soon as everybody else shows up, I'll be there reading off your messages. So check it out, pagesincolor.com. If you want to catch me off air because you have something that is confidential, or perhaps you're feeling a little self-conscious, you can give a call to the Huff line. The Huff line is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, which is also 4833, 423-4833, again, an area code 831. And if you want to hear this show later because it's so exciting and wonderful that you have to hear it again, or maybe you missed some of it, and we do have some questionable guests on here today that you might want to question, you can check the the Huff website, which is Huff Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, huffsantacruz.org. And that's a place where these shows are also archived. Lots of information about homeless civil rights issues. A lot of it's dated, but because there's been little change in the city council's attitude, policies, and police policies in Santa Cruz, it's really unfortunately quite current. So you can check huffsantacruz.org and then go to the name of the show, which is, you may have heard, is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Bathrobes Pierre, of course. I got my bathrobe ready just in case there are any sleeping band demonstrations. And there were some who said, I guess it was many years ago, that I reminded them of Robespierre. Why? I don't know. I don't have a very nice wig. I haven't executed anybody lately. But so, hence, Bathrobespierre. So, the name of the show, Bathrobespierre Broadsides, click on that and you'll be able to pick up past shows. And hopefully at some point they will be indexed so you can read them. Actually, in the studio with us is that notorious indexer, Thomas Levitt. Thomas, when's that indexing going to happen?
Real soon now.
Yeah. Actually, some of the shows are indexed, and, you know, it's kind of like a crapshoot. You can check them out. You know, who knows? Who knows what show you'll find? So you can go there. Again, that's huffsantacruz.org, and then you click on Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. We have a caller, and callers take precedence. So let's see what this caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert, and actually Bruce is here, Bruce Bratton. I haven't introduced him formally. I will in a moment, but he's listening in, so watch out.
And you better be formal, too. I really want
to. I'm going to try to be formal.
Put your necktie and get that straightened out there in your collar.
We've got a necktie for you, Bruce.
Okay.
Hey, caller, are you with us?
Oh, yes, I am, Robert.
Okay, who are you, caller? Just sign in, please.
I am Christine, calling from Area 420 in Santa Clara County, Robert. How you doing?
Oh, hi, Christine. Do I know you?
You may not know me. I'm sure you know Jim Losey. He is our executive director, Area 420.
Uh-huh.
He has recently asked me to take over handling our information hotline for patients here in Santa Clara County. And he asked me to give you a call and give you an update on what's going on over here.
That would be great.
At this point, we still have no dispensaries here in Santa Clara County. We are working with the city of Mountain View on some guidelines to possibly have this gentleman open a dispensary there. And our ID card program under SB 420, they are putting a proposal to the Board of Supervisors in October to get the program implemented here in our county.
So an ID program, but nothing to show ID to get any product with?
No.
Or from?
Still nothing for any product. All of us still have to go to San Francisco, Alameda, County.
Well, you can always go down to the, you can do some dealing under the bridge. I mean, why not?
Well, yeah, there's a
just
lot of people
wheel your patients
that.
Down there. I mean, come on. I mean, it's this is the 21st century, and we have our own modern ways of doing things.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
In New Orleans, we flood the city because we've got problems with, spending money for dikes and levees. And
exactly.
In San Jose, it's kind of a form of triage. You know, those sick people, if they say excess mouths, that sort of thing.
In fact, that's what a lot of people do is they go through the black market because they can't get up there to the city or to Oakland.
So what's the story? I know there was a club in San Jose, in 1997 or something?
Yes, there was.
And it closed. And is it like in Santa Cruz, they put in repressive zoning laws? Or what happened?
I do believe they did, and they've pretty much made it impossible for any kind of dispensary application to even get through the city of San Jose. Mountain View seems to be a little more receptive to the possibility. They haven't actually put any moratoriums in place or anything.
Uh-huh.
And they're receptive to the issue. Santa Clara, we've met with them on one or two occasions, and they're somewhat receptive to it. So it's just a matter of finding a landlord that's willing to allow their property to be used for that. But the one thing people over here seem to throw out all the time is, well, it's a quality of life issue. We need to protect our children, et cetera, et cetera.
What about protecting your grown-up children from pain and illnesses and things of that sort? How about allowing
all those dangerous, sick and dying people?
Yeah, we're real dangerous people, aren't we? It's very sad for someone in my position to, see this happening and know that I have to venture way out of my county to get anything, and that puts me at risk. So what about my security?
Christine, what's your ailment?
Recurrent major depression, tension headaches. I do have some back pain, not too much, though.
How does the DA stand in San Jose or Santa Clara County on prosecutions of medical marijuana providers? Have any been prosecuted? Here in Santa Cruz, we had Roger Minch prosecuted by our own DA, Bob Lee, as recently as March, in spite of their so-called pseudo-marijuana, medical marijuana-friendly stance. So.
Well, I can tell you I have dealt with San Jose Police Department twice in the last 3 years. Twice they have taken my medicine from me. Twice I have received it back from them. It did take a little bit of a fight, but I did receive it back from them. I'm not sure what their stance is, per se, on that particular point. I believe in my case, as long as I have my paperwork current, valid, and legal, they've told me they will not harass me anymore.
What about the possibility, some of us have talked about it here, and we actually arranged it, where Councilmember Riley, was attending a WAM function. WAM is our, it isn't a medical marijuana
provider.
Yeah, we're
coming to WAM Fest next weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they are, of course, fighting their own struggle.
Yes.
And I've had a lot of criticism of WAM on the station for the last 5 years for not putting their shoulder to the wheel and making sure that others get access to marijuana through changing the law, since they were on the inner track on creating the restrictive zoning ordinance that has thus far prevented any club from opening. Though there is a club here in Santa Cruz scheduled to open once it gets police department and planning department approval. That's called Greenway. Lisa Mullenow is, and actually I was running that. I'm hoping to have a call-in from her today. Maybe she'll even come into the studio and, you know, who knows? She might medicate. Never can tell. That woman is a questionable person. Anyway, so we've thought in here at one point of doing a thing called Huff and Puff, which is simply because low-income people have particularly no access to medical marijuana, setting up a table in front of City Hall and dispensing it. They had a big hullabaloo where former Mayor Christopher Crone distributed medical marijuana. Actually, he was present when it was distributed by WAM people, but it was to 13 selected people, and there were no, other people were discouraged from distributing marijuana. Mm-hmm. There was no change in the law allowed. You've had a stalemate there for what? For almost eight or nine years as far as opening any dispensaries? You're in the second largest city in the state.
We are the largest city in our county too.
Yeah, I mean it's a scandal. It's a disgrace, and
us it's a very sad state of affairs, because I have people that call me all the time now. Where are you located? We don't have a location. We're just a patient information and resource center.
Maybe we should all march over to San Jose and set up a table in front of City Hall over there. And
now that would be very interesting, especially because we have a brand new City Hall downtown that they spent $375 million on building. So that might be something to do.
Well, I know Jim Losey, who's with your group, actually, I guess he started the website Area 420. Is it area420.com? Is that the...
That's correct, Area 420.
So people want information, and if you're listening, listeners out there, check out that website, area420.com. He was helping us with Huff and Puff about a year ago when we were considering and working on setting up a medical marijuana distribution to get the city off its butts, city council, actually. And who knows? Maybe that had some impact. I think raising the issue, at least verbally, and heating up the pot may have finally gotten Rotkin and Riley, our mayor and one of our council members, to introduce the measure and pass it very quickly this July, in essentially okaying Lisa Molinow's permit, although not letting her have masseurs on the premises. I mean, after all, we don't want any, you know, make it too comfortable for the medical marijuana people.
Which would be fine with us, too, if we had at least a place to dispense from. I think the patients within this county would be much happier. They don't necessarily need a place where they can sit and smoke.
Let me see if either of my companions here have any questions for you or any comments on this. Thomas, Bruce, any questions for Christine over here of Area 420? They look too stoned to answer, actually. They're just,
think I need to join you in that.
Right, actually, yeah. Well, I appreciate the update. Is there any events coming up that we should know about, anything of that sort?
Nothing at this point. We're, like I said, we're going to be at WAM Fest next weekend. give our support to them and the community at large. And other than that, we're going to probably be having another barbecue.
You should barbecue the mayor of San Jose while you're at it. I mean, and when I say that, I mean roast him at this Wham Fest.
That would be great. And he's getting roasted as it is on a few of his own issues.
Get Valerie to take enough time away from her own prosecution, her own federal lawsuit, to speak out specifically about San Jose and how it's hurting the population of we'll get over a million people there, right?
Yes, we are.
You know, who have no access to medical marijuana, unless, of course, you come pouring into Santa Cruz when the Greenway Club opens up.
Well, that's the other thing, is getting over the hill to Santa Cruz. A lot of us don't have vehicles. You know, we ride public transit, walk, and use a bicycle.
And those of you who do have to make a bank loan before filling your gas tank, right?
Exactly, especially nowadays.
Well, listen, thank you for calling in. Is there anything more that we've missed or that you want to say before we press on here?
No, I think we're okay with that. Robert, we'll keep you posted and updated as things happen.
Do you have a phone number people can call if they want to help out, or do you suggest they just go to the
website? Sure. Our number is 408-509-7656.
408-509-7656. And the name of the group is?
Area420.com.
Area420.com. Thanks, Christine, and maybe I'll see you next weekend at the Wham Fest.
Sounds great, Robert. We'll see you there.
Have
a great day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, as I've mentioned before. And I forgot to ask her about the Columbus statue, because that was smashed some years ago by a militant activist concerned about getting rid of war criminals in public places. War criminals. I don't know what you call Columbus, who precipitated the genocide of the Indians in Hispaniola, now Haiti, and the Dominican Republic, but he certainly is infamous for that.
Jim Costner.
That was Jim Costner, but I'm wondering.
He's still in town.
Yeah, he is in town.
He'll be back in town for a while.
Banned from this radio station, again, through internal politics and problems, unfortunately. But Free Radio has its problems. Hopefully we'll resolve them eventually. It's been years. We could get back to that. Anyway, I'm going to introduce my special guest, Bruce Bratton. Bruce is a columnist, a blogger, a former writer for the Metro, art critic, movie critic, activist who's been fighting the Seaside Company. And what else, Bruce? Give yourself a... Let's hear some more.
Well, let's see. The Seaside Company. Yes, I've been fighting the Seaside Company, but also been fighting a lot of land use issues here since 1970. You know, the nuclear power plant in Davenport and Wilder Ranch and the 10,000 homes that were going in there and the Wingspread Conference Center and the Coast Hotel Conference Center. A number of issues. Not just the boardwalk. Boardwalk is one of my pet peeves that continues onward. But
The other issues you mentioned are kind of ancient issues, which, you know, I mean, I...
Coast Hotel ain't too ancient.
Coast Hotel ain't too ancient. That's
no.
correct.
No.
The other ones, however, I mean, I hear Mike Rotkin claiming to be a big union man, and, of course, he's attempting to break the Metro strike. So he's the guy who's against police abuse because he raised his voice in 1981. But, you know, he's been an endless backer of the police department since then. So, I always like to make a current. You're quite right. You were instrumental. Not only that, you were out on the streets two or three weeks ago trying to challenge the Seaside Company's, what are we going to call it, the turnstile, the public access?
No. The public access. Yeah, the walkway number 6 that they illegally closed. And so we went down there to raise some public awareness.
Did the Sentinel cover it?
No. Metro did.
And Bratton Online did. For those of you who are interested in checking this man's writing and so you can sort of get a sense of what he's up to, you can go to Bratton Online, Bratton Online, all one word, all small
word.
.com.
Right. .com. Maintained by Mr. Thomas Levitt here to my right and to your ears.
By my wife, Gunilla Levitt, who is the designer and...
This might qualify as a paid commercial, except A, I'm not being paid.
And, none of us. Yeah.
B, also, Thomas maintains the website for Huff, without charge, and has also been instrumental in a number of civil rights activities, trying to right civil wrongs here in Santa Cruz. He ran for city council in 2002, and he will be taking over my show if and when I go to jail after my October 3rd trial for disrupting a public meeting at City Hall on June 14th. And hopefully that charge will be dropped short of trial, but this time they're looking pretty serious, so I've got to make preparations that you'll be able to have a fine show while I'm in the hokey, or in the pokey, or in the hokey charges in the pokey. Bruce is also a radio broadcaster. He just got his license.
I've had the license for a long, long, long time, FCC license. I just got final approval and have been sitting in for John Sandage the last couple of weeks up at KZSC.
Uh-huh. That's on the Wednesday show?
Thursday night, 7 to 8:30, Sandage's show.
Huh, and that one is called?
It's called The Politics of Santa Cruz Reality, which is a very zen title, and it's taken me a month to try to figure it out, and I can't figure out what the politics of Santa Cruz Reality.
But you're doing the hosting anyway.
I did it. It's all over. John was at Burning Man, and so he'll be back this week.
So are you going to get your own show?
Oh, I have no idea. No idea.
Well, you know, Free Radio will have a spot here if you want to jump on board, probably. I mean, you know, you're... Let's get into this. You were a Metro columnist for, what, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, I guess so. 5 or 6. And Good Times and The Sentinel and, you know, just about every other paper you can name. The Independent and Santa Cruz Express and all that.
Yeah, by the way, my producer, Becky Johnson, says hi.
Oh, tell her good morning. Happy Labor Day.
And you heard it here on Free Radio. So there was a point at which, however, you were, shall we say, dismissed, discharged, let go from the Metro.
Oh, sure. Well, also in Good Times and the Sentinel and most of the other papers.
Can you give us a little history about, you know, I'd like to hear about how you began working with each of these papers and then the point at which they separated from you and the reasons that happened. To me, that's interesting because as a person who's been excluded from a number of arenas, mm-hmm. It's always nice to feel that somebody else is getting the shaft. Actually, it's not really nice, but it's interesting to hear the process by which that this happens.
Well, of course, in the first place, the overall view is it is media, and there's something about media which does not mean longevity. And I started out my career, well, actually, I started off on KPFA when I was a student at Berkeley, producing shows up there. But after that, I went on to work at Channel 5, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 2 as a director producer. And then got more into radio and KCBS, the CBS outlet. And then finally, just before I came to Santa Cruz, ABC's outlet, KGO, number one rated.
And did you have, were you dumped from these for your opinions or actions? Or
no, I wasn't on air.
You weren't on air. You were a producer.
None of those were really on air. No, I was in, director, producer, administration, all that stuff.
And was there any controversy about the kind? Did you have any problems producing the kind of shows you wanted?
There? No. Not at all. I mean, only at KGO was I really in a position to do anything of a real administrative thing. Otherwise, I was just hired on as a producer, director for individual radio talent.
I see. And what that meant was, what kinds of people did you handle in terms of the subject matter? Was these?
Well, for instance, my goodness, it's Labor Day weekend. On Labor Day weekend, we had Cesar Chavez come in. We had, I forgot that. That was back in the mid-'80s. Mm-hmm. Can't tell you for sure. Wow, and it was Labor Day weekend. And he came in with some friends. We had Huey Newton and a lot of the Black Panthers. This is KCBS.
In the 60s or in the 70s?
70s. No, I'm sorry. I moved here in 70, so all this was 60s. Huh. Yeah.
And you were never criticized for making a controversial decision. Somebody else made the decision and told you to work on it.
No, lots of times I made those decisions. And I went to a lot of work.
Any flack for making those kinds of decisions?
Not really. No, so this is big time commercial radio.
But these were liberal, more liberal times, or they were just media figures that they wanted to follow. Huey Newton, of course, was notorious as being, one of the co-founders of the Black Panther Party.
Right. Oh yes, right.
As well as later being a very,
person. That's a very very logical question. But no, we got no flack. We got no flack from, as I say, and this is in this is CBS for crying out loud.
Now, as a cynic, should we say, was that because you blended in and hewed with the mainstream line, or because you were particularly adroit in presenting a point of view that was, to me, of course, I'm to the left, and so I would wonder if where you were with respect to that. And was it a political issue? Were you raising the issue of the Vietnam War?
No, we were raising labor issues with Cesar Chavez, of course, and we were raising Black Panther and racial issues with those guys. And I can't tell you, I mean, how many politicians of all kinds that we had on radio programs. Mm-hmm. And I was really the one, I would engineer, no, I didn't mean that term, but I would direct, create the questions and where we wanted to go, and we dealt with the issues. I mean, we were saying, the hosts, whoever I was producing for and so forth, and controlling the program, there's another thing, controlling these programs off the microphone, we would get into all of those issues that we wanted to get into, you know, the farm workers and what was happening here and there and so forth, and unions and busting the unions and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So your editorial independence was never an issue until you came over the hill to Santa Cruz and started working in print media here?
Well, yeah, you could say that, but I mean, you're connecting something that has, I mean, there are years in between, in between. But I must say that in those times in the 60s, what we were doing, these were news programs, both on news stations, KCBS and KGO, mainly that I worked, and we had no control. We had nobody approving. Well, in the first place, it was almost all spontaneous and ad lib. We didn't say this is what we're going to ask them. Do we get approval? This or that. We just had them in, just like we're doing this morning. There's literally no difference in that. But there's a little point. I'm not sure, though, your listeners may realize, and that is with real radio, big time radio, where there's money and things like that. Rush Limbaugh's programs, and Al Franken's, and Amy, what's her name's, and
Goodman.
All those. I really knew that. And they all have producers. And, of course, all the calls are screened. They're all programmed. They say, hi, caller, the producer, the director, whatever title they may have. Say, what is your name, where are you from, and what do you want to talk about? And then a really good director, producer is probably more the common term, would say, what is it you want to talk about? And they would get the caller all shaped up. So that when they finally came on there and said, yes, I want to talk about the fact that Pope is gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then, boy, that would hit the air. And, you know, because they call and say, yes, I'm talking about religion. Well, what do you want to talk about on religion? And say, well, I want to talk about the Catholic Church. Yes.
Making it sexy and actually giving it a focus.
Well, get it down to the folk, what they really want to say.
Right.
But not changing what they want to say, but getting them to say, to come right out on the air and say, this is what I want to talk about.
Well, free radio lags way behind. Although we do have the advantage of, you know, you get to call in and say what you want until such time as you so annoy, irritate, or...
Or boring.
And bore us.
Boring,
yeah,
you know, like, well, you know, boy, it's nice weather here, Robert. What's it like in Santa Cruz?
Right.
Junk like that. So,
but what about Thomas's question? Because I think it's very interesting. Here in Santa Cruz, you have been subject to, some might call it censorship. Because, I mean, it's not, they didn't move into your house and take away your typewriter or your computer, but they did remove your column.
Well, they fired me, is what they, you know.
They,
I mean,
fired you from the Metro. That's the most recent thing. And you mentioned it had previously been done at the Sentinel and other
things. Sentinel. Mm-hmm.
Can you go through some of those and give us the history of why that happened? Because I think that, at least that interests me.
Okay. What happened was undeterminable because I was never really told. Never. I mean, that'd be
but
the last thing.
You might
thing.
Speculate, Marshall.
You're never saying, we're letting you go, Bratton, because of such and such. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be a foolish mistake on management's part to ever do that, especially in the media. And so I was just let go. That's it. Don't come back next week, or don't write your column next week, whatever.
There's no protection in terms of having...
No.
You know.
No. It's just a decision has been made, and that was your last column. Thank you very much. And that, for instance, that was the Sentinel. Now, the coincidence about that we might be getting. You want to take that call?
I do, but can you hold your thought?
Oh, darn right.
All right, then. Hi, caller. You're on free radio with Bruce, Thomas, and Robert.
Yeah, I was just wondering. So, the Metro, is that the one that runs Distenzo?
Yes.
And is. Oh, no. Does this. I'm sorry, your name is John?
Yeah, it is actually John Bruce Bratton, but everybody calls me Bruce.
Okay, hello, Bruce. Did you ever work with DiCenzo?
Sure.
And what do you think of that guy?
I think the heavens and earth, I did love him. I love him.
Well, I have to say that I think I might be glad that they took away your right to write.
Oh, okay. Well, likewise.
Denzo is a fucking pig.
Oh.
I hate that guy, dude.
Gee.
If I ever see him in the dark, I swear to God, I'll jump him.
Oh, that's not nice to say on Labor Day. On Labor
Day. I know, but he's a fucking pig, dude. He's such a pig.
That's an intelligent call there, isn't it?
What was this? I have this on my refrigerator because I was the woman, me and another girl named Ivy, were the women who took off our shirt when we were riding to protest the war, and they arrested our girlfriend.
And that was Steve DiCenzo.
Mistress Violet. They arrested Mistress Violet. They almost ran her off her bike with their motorcycles.
I remember
that. And then they arrested her.
Mm-hmm.
And we were pissed. So we took off our shirts to protest her being arrested. We were protesting the war in Iraq. And he writes this, like, fucking comic about how we don't give a shit about the people in New York. And, like, that's the complete opposite. We give a shit about all human life. And the critical mass bike riders, the main reason that we gather together and get on bikes and ride is to raise awareness for riding a bike instead of driving a car, which is better for the environment, better for the planet Earth, and better for all human life.
Caller, let me jump in here. You know, DiCenzo has written some pretty nasty shit. I mean,
he's fucked up.
He has, I mean, but he's also done some great cartoons too. I mean, he takes the Kennedy and Rotkin and these other clowns on the city council, and lampoons them to an extent that no one else in this community has done, and he does so in such a way that it's recognizable. It's hard hitting.
I mean, unfortunately, he's extremely sexist.
Yeah, well, I agree with that too.
You can't be like half conscious, Robert. You can't be like, okay, I'm going to be like going off on this city government, and at the same time going off on women who are trying to organize, who are trying to be treated as equal.
I understand your feeling on this, but I also think that you have to recognize. I mean, you got to give a person credit where credit's due, and criticism where criticism is appropriate. And I think you got to hear both, and that's what I would do. DiCenzo, when I went to jail, had a cartoon of me getting butt fucked by the people in jail when I went to jail for serving free food. Was I happy about his cartoon? No. He doesn't give a shit about homeless issues. He portrays homeless people as having flies around their head. You know,
and that's okay?
Of
like,
course not. Of course not.
Of course not.
But
I swear to God, if I ever meet that guy, I'm going to fucking jump
That's
him.
Wrong. But he also does other things that I love to see. So I am really, you know, I have to take a mixed view on DiCenzo, just as I take a mixed view on Bruce Bratton, for that matter.
What kind of things do you write about, Bruce?
Oh, opera, movies,
What's
the environment.
Your favorite opera?
My favorite?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a favorite. I like a lot of different kinds of operas. I've seen a couple, 300 of them. Oh, probably Wagner.
Yeah.
Wagner operas, yeah.
Like the Les Miserables.
It's not an opera, but it's close.
Oh.
It's a musical.
How about Phantom?
That's the, yeah, same bag. Yeah, it's sort of...
Yeah, you don't like that stuff, huh? Too
no, I don't, actually. No.
I do, Nene.
Maybe?
Pardon me?
Too Americanized?
It's no, they're British. British operas.
Too European?
Well, no, not
white?
No. Wagner's pretty European too. No, they're just sort of pop operettas or musicals. They're like, you know, MGM musicals.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a different ball game. That's all.
Totally. So you write about opera and what else?
The environment and a lot of Santa Cruz politics.
And that's why he's here on the show, caller, because I want him to talk about that. And also, I'm going to.
Do you write about homeless issues?
No, not very often.
Have you ever
I'm
been
sure
homeless?
We're going to get. Pardon me?
Have you ever been homeless?
Very, very close, but.
Yeah, I think it's. I actually have never experienced it either, but I've had friends who have, and actually friends who are. And it's amazing that our political structure doesn't do more. I mean, I guess I'm kind of a socialist or something, but it just seems like there's a lot more we could be doing for our people instead of, like, sending bombs to another country to put them back into the Stone Age or whatever. But, I'm sorry that I said that. I'm glad that you don't have a place to write, but I totally hate DiCenzo, dude. And I'm sorry that you think that he's cool, because I think on any level that, you know, DiCenzo has shown to me that he's very anti-female and that he's very... Like, he's really a hateful person, and it just makes me so mad. I'm actually not very violent at all. I'm not a physically violent person. But when I think about DiCenzo, my blood pressure starts to build, and I get really angry. I don't think I would actually jump him and beat him up, but I would definitely like to have a conversation with him, maybe on the air. And since you think so highly of him, if you could give me some contact information so that I could get him onto my show, I would be so appreciative.
Well, Bruce has not been with the Metro for 3 years now, so I don't know. I mean, do you?
But
you,
you know, when you're friends with somebody, you're friends with somebody.
Well,
so.
I don't know. Were you friends with DeCenzo or?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Okay, we'll call him up and we'll see if we can get him on the show and we can grill him. I kind of doubt that he. I mean, who knows? I've got.
Yeah, because he likes to hide behind
the
paper.
I get the impression that he's.
All right, I'm going to let you guys get back to the show. Thank you very much.
Person.
Peace.
Yeah, thank you, caller. And thanks, caller. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. On the horn here is Bruce Bratton, Robert Norris, and Thomas Levitt. Call in number 427-3772. Bruce, why did they let you go from the Sentinel?
Oh, okay. Well, as we were saying, it was never really, I was never told. Either. And the story of the Sentinel is exactly the same as the Metro. One week I write about nasty things about the boardwalk, and the next week I'm out. Zunk. Now,
it was just
is
a, coincidence,
Bruce.
Right.
Well, yeah, like now, was the hurricane a coincidence, or was it really, generated by
making Charlie Canfield into a devil? How can you possibly? You know, you lefty types don't understand. Business needs the boardwalk in Santa Cruz.
Right. Right. But anyway, that's such a long topic. But that's what happened, though. I mean, as far as narrowing it down.
What
to
were
your
you writing
question,
about that was critical of the Seaside Company?
Well, okay, in the Sentinel, and you got to realize who my editor was. That was Bruce McPherson. Bruce McPherson was my editor,
and he is now Secretary of State. Right?
Yeah, well, right. Can't be helped, I guess.
Well, we could send a special. Well,
anyway,
no terrorist threats.
Put the extra bolts on the door there, So what I wrote about back then it's actually the same thing I'm still writing about. I've always been concerned that the boardwalk isn't paying their fair share of taxes. That's all. That is the beginning and the end of my problem with the boardwalk. You know, that I wish that the city had enough guts to go after them. And back then,
what should they do? What should the city do? Let me interrupt you because this is really important. I think because I know you've been writing about it recently in your Bratton Online.
Yeah.
Call
certainly. The city should redo all of the bookkeeping with the boardwalk. It's such a complex issue.
You're not
even
suggesting that City Attorney John Barisoni is somehow not keeping up with the boardwalks?
No, they should fire John Barisoni.
Well, what about City Manager for Life Dick Wilson?
Right, they should fire Dick Wilson.
Well, now hold it. How about Seal Cirillo?
They should fire. No, this is a recording. Yeah, they should get rid of all those people. But anyway,
You heard it here. Actually, I've made the same kinds of.
Well,
demand.
I've been writing about it for a couple of years. About it's time to get rid of this. Not necessarily Dick Wilson, but get rid of the city manager type of government entirely.
Thomas
Christopher Krohn and I just talked about this two nights ago up at KZSC.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Levitt.
Well, I just wanted to make the point that aren't there actually more issues related to the boardwalk's behavior than simply their failure to pay taxes, like their occupation of the public land and the tide lands, blocking off public space, the fact that they own over a third of the beach flats, and they're essentially one of the city's biggest slumlords, and that they've taken a whole bunch of land off the market, and, I mean, just their influence in Santa Cruz politics is somewhat corrupting.
Yep.
Like, until the progressive revolution of the 70s, or the pseudo-progressive revolution, they basically ran city politics to a large extent, correct?
Sure. They mostly still do now. I mean, that's why they were... I mean, when I say... Yeah, the taxing, you're exactly right. I mean, that is way too simplified for my interests in changing the boardwalk's relationship to the city. Yeah, the bottom line is taxes for me, because then if, for instance, we had a proper amount of tax for those, we can debate how many million people come there a year, but if we had a fair amount, we wouldn't have the budgetary problems that we have in Santa Cruz City now. And you're right, as we were mentioning here on this very, very program earlier, the illegal closing of public access to the beach was done with not necessarily approval, but city looking the ignorance or
actually
not dealing with it.
Actually, on that issue, I don't know if you saw it, but at one point, Debbie Bolger, who's been following this issue and pretty closely, forwarded an email from a city staff member, which unfortunately I don't have a copy of. I'm sure she still has a copy, which basically asked her to play along with the city on this. Because
Chris Schneider.
Yeah, and because the boardwalk had agreed to fund some improvements.
I'm going to build a handicap ramp on the upside, on the north side of the trestle.
So the city staff was going to try and go along with their request to do this with the Coastal Commission in return for whatever small amount of funding that the boardwalk was going to provide for this.
Without
apparently
any
they hadn't actually... Yeah, without any real public discussion over this,
right.
And without apparently a lot of effort to find alternative sources of funding.
Yeah. There is more than that even. See, what the board wants, has done, one is to put up that illegal fence that shuts off that one part of the public access. And then, and also what they want to do now is...
Tell us what that fence is, by the way, so people...
Pardon me?
Where is that fence?
It's the closest to the San Lorenzo River end. It's under the Logger's Revenge, if you really know the board, by the trestle. It's the furthest. It's gate number 6 for a good reason. There's 6 gates. There's supposed to be 6 public access routes from our land in the city to our beach, and the boardwalk is in the way. So traditionally, it's been the law that there'll be 6 public
access. And some claim that the boardwalk is on property that should still be public.
Well, some do claim that. Yes,
Phil Bear among them was on our show.
Yeah, I got a great letter. Boy, I should have brought that along. I got an email from Phil this morning and Tuesday. I can't even tell you about it because I didn't pay enough attention. I was racing around to get down here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, like I say, this issue gets more involved because there's more land. See, the boardwalk put up the fence, but what they want to do more than putting in, keeping up that fence and keeping that enclosed is to take over more land. That certainly doesn't belong to them. It's a question about who it even belongs to. That goes all the way up, right up to the railroad tracks, right up to the trestle. It's an extra, I can't tell you how many thousand square feet, but it's a large triangle of land. And so when they do that, if they get to do that, then they said, okay, we'll build you a cement rampway for the handicapped accessible so that you can come across the trestle, stay on the same side of the trestle, go around this ramp, and then go down, and that'll take you down to the beach cement walk, and you can walk down to the beach. And
so what they're saying,
except in the winter when there's no sand there.
So what they're saying is that rather than going through this gate, you would go up this ramp and over and then down. Is that what they're suggesting?
No. See, this doesn't make sense to talk about much on radio.
Right,
it's hard to grasp.
Right, hard
if
to
you're
visualize.
Walking across the trestle. Right,
uh-huh.
and you're coming onto the boardwalk and onto this side of the San Lorenzo. Instead of literally crossing the tracks and going down where you used to, crossing the tracks to go on the boardwalk side, you would cross the track. You would not cross the tracks, but you would turn to your right and go on down ramp on that side. So, like I said, but on radio, TV would have a nice chart up there.
So, what kind of a tax? I mean, what could, if you had the city council you wanted, Bruce, what could they do on the second Tuesday in September when they're going to be returning from recess or from their vacation that would change things? I mean, what specific kinds of taxes or measures would you propose? Lawsuits, taxes, measures? What would be your, what's your program for making the boardwalk responsible and opening up access to real funding for the city?
To have the boardwalk pay the same entertainment tax that all businesses in Santa Cruz do.
And how much would that...
That's for start.
Again, and how much is that? And how much would that bring?
I have no idea.
But they haven't... They've been exempted from the entertainment tax since...
Yes, since I got fired from the Sentinel. Because that was
is
what
that
it was.
Is that the reason they fired?
Yeah. It dawned on me. And that's what I was saying, because Charlie Canfield was saying, well, if the city's going to be this nasty, I might just as well close up. And I thought, gee, that'd be a good idea. You know, maybe close up the... Sure, you know.
Now, wait a minute. Some people would say, hold it. You're going to be removing a large magnet that draws people to Santa Cruz. And for those who have money and who don't need to worry and can use this place as sort of a second vacation home, that wouldn't be a problem. But for people who need jobs, for people who need access to services, for small business owners and the people around the local tourist traps, folks downtown, and legitimate people, too, trying to struggle on and do what they need to do. Don't you think the closing of the boardwalk would have a detrimental effect on the economy of this area?
Oh, yeah, for at least a couple of weeks. It'd be really
tough.
A couple
of weeks?
Yeah.
And then what would happen?
Come on. I mean,
Bush would then send in the Marines.
Do you think Santa Barbara's broke because they don't have a boardwalk? Let's move the boardwalk to Santa Barbara. I mean, other cities have made it without, you know. I love, first of all, though, I got to say, I do love the boardwalk. I go there as often as I can, especially now with three grandsons. I ride the Giant Dipper and all that. So I do like the boardwalk.
I mean, Canfield hasn't yet kind of fixed the Dipper on the day you ride.
Heck no. I even rode the pirate swinging ride with Charlie Canfield. He wanted to really convince me.
He figured you'd both be swingers together, right?
Yeah, both swingers together. Yeah. I've known Charlie for a long, long time. We were neighbors up on Swanton Road.
And so he invites you home. You guys shoot.
He used to. I haven't seen him in a long time because I moved away from Swanton Road. But so as I say, yeah, that's my beginning thing is just because of the money crunch nowadays is for easy starters to reapply the entertainment tax to all of the boardwalk
games. But you don't have an idea of how much that would bring in?
No, I don't. Because
No
city council person has ever gotten back to me. I said, well, just that'd be really simple.
Yeah, but if you're going to rely on that, you'll never hear anything.
Yeah, I never have. You're
what
exactly
about your
right
buddy Christopher Crone, the man who joined you down there to help?
He never got me any figures either. And my other buddy Ryan Coonerty. So far, just about a month ago, I said, Ryan, get me those figures. Let's just find out. I mean,
why don't you just make a Public Records Act request?
Yeah.
Actually, that wouldn't be in the public records, but you probably can get somebody to estimate the tax based upon the number of people who show up per year.
Maybe so.
You're not going to get it from the city council, clearly. So.
Yeah, but see, my point, Robert, is that, like, Costco, if you really want to find out what Costco or Borders or Bookshop Santa Cruz, if you wanted to find out the taxes, the amount of taxes they pay in the year, you could find out. It'd be right there. But somehow the boardwalk taxes are not accessible. They're not. I haven't tried. I don't have the time to do it because that's not the kind of thing that I do in my column. And no city council people have ever been able
to do that. I do the same kind of thing you do. I mean, I don't do the original research that's really needed, the grunge work to find out what the hell's going down. I raise the issue. I hope other people carry the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most of the time they don't. But some of the time they do. I mean, so that hopefully it catalyzes things. And hopefully you're catalyzing things too.
This is interesting because, let's see. I don't know if it was your article, but there was some article in the Sentinel about the relative amount of money in tax revenue generated by each area of the city.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that the East Side generates $3 million and downtown generates $1 million, the boardwalk generates like $500,000 or something.
Whatever.
I believe that at some point either the boardwalk or the city. Or city staff or someone came back and said that, well, that's completely off because you're not. So somebody knows enough about how much this boardwalk generates to say that the figures cited were underestimated the boardwalk contribution.
Well, now, wait a minute. Okay, so
at least that was their contention.
I repeated the figures that were given in the Sentinel on the front page article about which areas pay the most on sales tax.
Right.
So I was then informed that. And the boardwalk came in fourth, and that really stunned me. And I put that in the column saying, wow, this really proves we don't need that boardwalk. I mean, East Side was number one, car revenue, I assume, car sale revenue. And so then I was corrected, and I apologize for that, because all that the Sentinel was reporting is sales tax. And the boardwalk, sales tax is just what they get from selling T-shirts and hard items. That is not the games, not the entertainment taxes, and not the rides, but just the hardcore retail items. That's where that figure was.
See, I think for people that
revenue from somewhere else. Did they say where that revenue was coming from?
It sounds like we don't have specific figures here.
Yeah.
And that's
I don't have it with me, but they're in the paper. I mean, they were printed in the front page of the Sentinel, but I'm just saying that those are only sales tax on hard items for the boardwalk. And so the boardwalk's income is from everything from beer and rides, everything else. That's not reported. And so, therefore, the boardwalk pays more than what that chart showed.
The reason this is important is that for those of us who want to see expenditures on other things, we all, whether it's a Citizens Police Review Board or equal wage,
living wage advisory committee, no expenditures whatsoever,
or an ombudsperson
as a cost saving move,
or a campground, or a car park for people who were in a city where there's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people at night in shelter tonight for 40 people in the emergency shelter program. So we need obviously to get this kind of money and. The problem is that whenever you vote the money, it goes into things like the police department, and it goes to, you know, maintaining the opulence of the what we pay the city manager and the city attorney. I know in your column recently, I'm going to skip ahead. I've asked you some questions you haven't answered yet, Bruce, and I do want to know why you left, you know, the specific details. You kind of gave the point. The Seaside Company, and you're writing about that, was the cause for, you believe.
Well, as I say, coincidental. And the same stories with the Metro. I mean, I wrote something there, and then I got a phone call, a phone message on my machine saying, don't write anymore. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
And that's the beginning and the end of all that I know about it.
Right. And that's, you know, I mean, that's and then you're a man who's written regularly for years, quite a readership.
Since 1975.
Was there much protest about your being dumped? Did people show up with picket signs? Were there overwhelming calls?
Nope.
Well, I quit picking up, I could never really figure out which one of the damn papers this column actually ran in.
Metro Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I know.
For a while, and then Good Times. Don't forget, I was with Good Times for like 20 years.
Previously.
15 years, different time segments.
So, but, you know, one of the things...
I'm with him again,
too. I would pick up the paper was, you know, to read his column or see the photograph. And I quit doing that. So I would assume that
a lot of people did say that.
And most of your column, Bruce, is not about local politics. It's about music. It's mostly about movies. You write a lot about movies.
No, not mostly. I mean, it's like in...
That's the part I
read. Maybe a fifth. Maybe a sixth of it might be movies. I only see like three or four a week.
Movies, art, local doings, local personalities, things of that sort. That's really what you write about. And, you know, you throw a paragraph or two in about politics. And when issues heat up, like the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel, which producer Becky Johnson 20 minutes ago asked me to ask you about, and I just picked up her message. You want to talk a bit about the Coast Hotel and where that is now, what the significance of all that is?
We carried
it in great detail at the time. We had Ralph Myberg on here repeatedly. So, you know, people know about the issue who have been listening or interested, but this is, of course, for those who know, a big hotel development project that was passed 4-3 by the city council, but the minority members in the city council believe that, as did I and others, and you too, Bruce, that enough time was not given to this, or maybe you felt that enough time was given, they should have voted no. I don't know. What was the deal?
My bottom line take on the Coast Hotel thing, it would have been nice if it had been a community process, that it wasn't a done deal fostered either by Scott Kennedy and or Cecil Cirillo and or Mike Rodkin and Dick Wilson, and just given to us to say, here's the package, folks, and we know you'll love it. And so we have just been, that's the one consistent thing that Santa Cruzans for Responsible Planning, SCRAP, the group that I've been very much a part of, got together and did the petition and got it signed several thousands of times over to stop the West Coast Hotel, Coast West Hotel. And we were just saying, hey, look, you know, one, we don't like it sprung on us, and that's a common complaint here in Santa Cruz, and that's what I really think. We need more community exposure, and I can prove some very recent ideas that have shown how that works. And that, again, is Charlie Canfield in the La Bahia. Charlie Canfield and Swenson Builders came to SCRAP, where they had public meetings, and SCRAP went there, saw the whole thing, said, hey, you know, given this, given that, the height and little labor issues and a few minor little things, La Bahia looks good to us. The same thing happened with Red Tree Properties buying the, got to make sure I get this right, the Lipton property. And so Craig French of Red Tree came to SCRAP meeting. We had a delightful time. He says, here's what we hope to do, and we don't know. We don't have anything in black and white yet. What do you guys think of it? And Scrap says, hey, we're in favor of it. I mean, that's part
of
the
process.
Of
course, Scrap didn't exist before when the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel project was put together, I guess, what, 2 or 3 years ago, right? 2 years ago.
Oh, it existed about a year before the Coast Hotel came up.
It did.
Oh, it certainly did.
I haven't heard about Scrap.
Oh, yeah. Well, no.
No one's invited me to one of their meetings.
For some reason.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I don't get invited a lot of places either.
Yeah, I guess not. I know. I should mention that the Metro Golden Poo-Poo Award, or whatever it is, every year, used to have Bratton continually outpacing me as the most annoying personality in Santa Cruz. And so you listeners can make your decision, and hopefully today you will include your vote as to who is the most.
We're both in the same room too.
Yeah, we're both boring you to death, so nobody's annoying. We need some really annoying people, please. Thank you.
Yeah, but I got the one. what was it? Personality most I'd most like to spank. Ooh, I got that wow. 1 year from somebody.
Really? Who was
but
she?
Yeah, you beat me out a couple of years too. And then I think was it Marcy Greenwood? I think a couple times came.
Mike
up
Rodkin and, came in occasionally.
Yeah, but you and I pretty much had that for quite a while.
But I notice they don't have us as activists or you know as advocates or as people who you know are passing on in news as news people or alternate news people. It's always these sort of you know interesting looking marginalized figures who are. You know, you don't really want to listen to them, but they're kind of colorful to, you know, to make faces at them.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, just, you know, I don't get no respect in this community, Bruce.
Yeah, you notice that?
Yeah, I noticed
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's coming up next? We had the beach, you know, the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel, and I guess in 1998 you were fighting the Beach South of Laurel plan, successfully able to dump the Kennedy slate, Steinau, Kornstrom and
Kornstrom?
Yeah, not Kornstrom. Quartararo. Quartararo.
Oh, Rod Quartararo.
Sorry,
right,
not Kornstrom.
Right.
Lee didn't run.
That's right, Linda Steinau. Right.
And then there was also the third person.
What did Becky want? We got interrupted. You said
she
wanted to ask about what?
She asked about Santa Cruz Coast Hotel and what you thought about it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we won, Mom.
Yeah, right.
Surprisingly, as I say, what we really wanted out of that, and we thought would have been a much smarter idea before the city lost so much money, is if they'd come to the community and said, here's what we're thinking. What do you folks think? Because there's a lot of us in scrap. I'm one of them that thinks what we really need is a larger conference center, not smaller, a larger one, and a bigger hotel, a gorgeous big hotel in a different location. I mean, and there was a terrible, terrible location. And so, you know, there's a lot of places downtown Santa Cruz that I think would be great candidates for. So it isn't against a conference center. It isn't against a hotel. I'd like to see personally one like something designed by Getty and what he did in Bilbao at the museum or Cavatera, who did the big new bridge up in Reading. Incredible world-famed architects designing something here that would bring people here for some reason other than go to the boardwalk.
Mm-hmm. You know, probably some listeners who are regularly follow the show because of civil rights and homeless issues are wondering, what is all this blather about stuff? How does that impact people who are low-income, people who are poor, people who are working? I mean, all these, I guess in some sense it has an effect on the economy. But, you know, here I have... you in the studio, Bruce, and I've criticized you for years because I feel you haven't focused on civil rights issues in your column. And obviously, everyone has a preference and an area of expertise and interest, and who am I dictating to you what you should say, except that you are one of the people who, until you talk about the Seaside Company, has had access to media on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've kind of trashed you regularly by saying, here's a guy who's, you know, he can't seem to say much about the city council until 2 years after they destroy the plaza project. You know, you were hoping and hoping and hoping that Byers and company would do the plaza. Remember downtown plaza?
Mm-hmm.
That was
one. Well, I remember. Yeah. It's in this week's column.
Oh, good.
Yeah, coming out next. Yeah,
you know,
next
I mean,
Tuesday.
I'm the one who was always. You know, I mean, I'm wondering what. Do you have any opinions on civil rights issues locally? I mean, is it an issue, or is it just something that a couple of, you know, ill toilet trained malcontents are raising inappropriately, or one of those things that just goes along with 21st century America? Oh, gee, you know, sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. Oh well, is it a phony issue, or is it something that concerns you, or what's your sense about that?
It's definitely not a phony issue. I mean, civil rights, equal rights, all of that are very, very real issues. As much a real issue here as they are. Anywhere in the world, and my response to you in all of those years, as you said, of badgering, is that I don't know enough about it. I don't have anything unique to say on it, and if I'm probably not going to say much about New Orleans either. But I've printed a couple good pieces that I found other places. I don't have anything unique to say on it. On the homeless issue, if I thought I know, I've got a good idea, or I really take this position, I really take that position, I didn't, you know. I read almost everything you've written on it and all of the handouts you've given me over the years, and yeah, that's one approach. And I don't know what to do. If I thought I had a personal solution to it that would solve it, just like medical marijuana, I haven't written much about that either. And it's not because I don't have feelings about it. I certainly have feelings about those things, but I don't have anything unique
Yeah, well, I mean, your feelings on the Seaside Company aren't unique. I mean, they're certainly, I think, important and articulate, but they're not unique. They're views held right. by other people, too.
Yeah, but they're not in the press. My views are not in the press, and that's why I like to keep pressing those
Similarly,
issues.
Views about dealing with, you know, the sleeping ban and the homeless situation, other than from the right-wing perspective, are not in the press either.
Except what you've gotten. I mean, like, here's a cool one right here.
Well,
you showed me your editorial.
Right. Bruce is looking at the Sentinel op-ed piece, you know, kind of the pre-jail piece where I criticize the city council for its rules on consent agenda, oral communication cutback. And that took me like a month and a half to get in the press, but I'm not in the press. I mean, in any meaningful way. This happens like once every 3 or 4 years. I can get
the radio. You've had the radio for all these years.
I have. But I have a different listenership than you do. And what interests me is that you choose. To me, I see it as a blackout on these issues. You don't. I mean, there was a time in 2000 when it was all the rage. People, there was a raging controversy. Buyers was on the fence on the safe sleeping zones. There was a real indication that pressure in the appropriate place, holding politicians accountable, because it's our city council that has the sleeping ban law in place. I mean, are you saying that you can't decide whether it's a good idea or not to criminalize people after 11 o'clock at night who sleep?
No, I didn't have the time to go into the issue.
You didn't have the time to go into
nope.
the issue.
Nope, exactly. Exactly. And there's a whole bunch of things that I make a decision on. You know, as you well know, mm-hmm. you make a personal decision on your own feelings on this issue, on that issue. And I can do something on this issue. I have feelings, strong feelings here, strong feelings there. And I can get somewhere, and I will stand up for this. I will stand up for that. And on your particular issues, I figure that's his thing. Mm-hmm. Do it. But I didn't have anything. If I had something that I thought was like really wow, nobody's ever looked at it. Like legalizing looting in New Orleans, I think would be. I mean, I don't know why this looting question. Give it to them. All those goodies, are all insured. For crying out loud, why do they even care if anybody loots? They're saving merchandise.
And they're also sending in troops and trying to refocus the issue on crime and law and order instead of the, you know, the obviously criminal behavior of the federal government
and other
authorities and the negligence there.
I mean, so, I, you know, for instance, there, that's about all I can think of in New Orleans that isn't being said somewhere. That, you know, legalize looting or forget that word, take that word out of it and let the people help themselves.
So it wasn't because you were afraid of offending political friends that
I don't have any political friends. None.
You have no political friends?
Nope.
Just like the Anderson Valley Advertiser, newspapers to have no friends.
No, nope. I mean, I am friends with a lot of people who are in politics. You know, on both sides, the ones I agree with and the ones I don't. But I mean, it's like yeah, I mean, people, as you well know, people who you consider friends have to take you as you are. And next week you may really zing them. And that's what any politician that I've ever so-called been friends with, that's what they know that. So in that sense, they're not friends, as in like protective. I'm soft on so-and-so or doubly hard on so-and-so. Mm-mm.
So you've never really felt any outrage at the idea that people have to sleep outside in Santa Cruz and face.
Yeah, but I didn't know what any answers were.
Not say to eliminate the law as a first step.
I don't know if eliminating the law. I just never went there.
We have
never
a caller. Let's see if somebody else can grill Bruce for a while here.
Good.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Bruce, Thomas, and Robert here.
Good morning, Bruce, Thomas, and Robert.
Hey, Linda.
I wanted to add my opinion to something Bruce just said about media.
Linda Leemaster?
Yes.
Oh.
Pardon?
I just wondered if that was you, Linda. Good morning.
You've been made, Linda.
Good morning. You know, when I was very young, like 18, and I was trying to go to community college, I was studying journalism, and I didn't know about it. It's not really a way to get a living, if you want to also be honest.
Yeah.
But I got to watch an education strike in Maryland and near Washington, D.C. in general. And it was interesting how for 3 or 4 days, all the stories were about why the teachers had walked out, because all the families were mad. Most of the families, that was their only daycare while they were at work. And then the Board of Education kicked in, and they started putting out their releases. And the commercial media turned their song around overnight. And so I don't have TV, but I was listening on the radio and finally learning to web surf with this disaster from Hurricane Katrina, and I think that's what happened. It was almost like a overnight decision to shift from how are we going to get all these people off the roofs to, oh, look at all those dark-skinned people looting. You know, something happened from some bureaucracy, maybe government or whatever.
So this is a comment that, about that.
That
okay.
triggered
I was wondering what you
people,
were talking about.
The writers coming from common human fears instead of doing any reporting.
Any comment, any questions for Bruce around the issues we've been talking about other than New Orleans? Or?
No, I kind of agree with what I'm hearing this morning. I think we should insist that we get a council, you know, recall if we have to, and get people who don't give away the coastline at all. I don't mean just the right-of-way we had, but any of it. But that's all I have to say right now.
So, Linda, you were as on the Homeless Issues Task Force. Would Bruce Bratton's talking about these issues have made any difference, do you think, in the actual reaction of Sugar and Byers city councils? Or
no.
Uh-huh.
No, I didn't realize this at the time in the middle of our process, but they'd already decided we were going to be stonewalled. I mean, you may remember a good part of how hard we tried to get a chance to talk and interact with the mayor or all of them, informally or out during a meeting. And they just wouldn't do it. And then they made up their excuse later why they didn't want to deal with what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anything, any pundit or any Mother Teresa would have done could have changed it.
Uh-huh. Well, I have to disagree with you, but hey, that's what this is all about.
Well, that doesn't mean a whole new thing couldn't have happened. I just don't think we could have got them to listen, you know.
Okay. We're talking, by the way, listeners, to those who don't know about 1999-2000 when there was a newly elected so-called progressive majority on the city council and there was strong pressure for a change in the anti-homeless sleeping ordinance or the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance. And Linda was the chair. Thomas was also on the Homeless Issues Task Force.
And Catherine Byers was on the city council.
And she was mayor, actually, for much of
that time.
So, Linda, do you believe...
And I got to watch the then police chief bark back at the then mayor that he wasn't going to do anything we suggested unless he was ordered to do so.
Time to whip out the orders. Go ahead, Thomas.
Linda, do you believe that the Homeless Issues Task Force was used, and I think this is a fairly common tactic, to divert energy and to take the pressure and the focus off of repealing the sleeping ban on all the other issues that like had been organized with David Silva's hunger strike and all that. It was used to like basically stretch out the whole process until it just dropped off the radar and they could safely kill it.
I think that might have been the wish of most of the electeds then, but I think it's more like they wanted the pressure off of them, you know.
Right, that's what I meant.
For that 8 or 9 months, they could just say, go talk to those guys.
Yeah,
so. And some people did. But what I started to say before is, Catherine started telling people like Sherry Conigal after it was all gone and ended that what they really wanted us to do is give them a plan for a shelter for homeless families. That's the only thing they really wanted. But
that was certainly,
you know,
never
that doesn't really
direction.
Hold up to the light of day because we tried so hard to get some feedback from them if we were anywhere near something that they would pick up and run with or at least deal with. And they were stonewalling us.
Yeah, we produced an interim report urgently and got no reaction to that either.
Yeah, I was a little surprised because with community support above and beyond who was on that panel, we gave them some good ideas and ways to implement them that really didn't cost any money. Maybe they didn't make as much, but it wasn't like they had to create a new infrastructure. And I expected at least a little bit of praise, even if they didn't pick up what we all felt they had asked for and deal with it as if homeless people were humans too. But, I mean, you know, I don't want to leave the phone with that thought. I want to leave the phone with the thought that everybody in this town ought to back the Coastal Commission and back down our city council and get it clear about where that land and who it belongs to. You know, you can still run an amusement park without stealing that kind of prime acreage from everybody in town, and you can not only pay your entertainment tax fairly, I mean, considering how poorly they pay wages, they can afford it better than most businesses, but you could be leasing the property you're trying to steal, too. That's
excellent.
My whole trip.
Thanks, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. So let me turn to that for a moment, since I think that's an issue which we can agree on and probably one we want to encourage people to act on. What should people do to, one, stop this latest land grab by the Seaside Company, but two, address the broader land grab that the Seaside Company has done, and three, deal with the tax issue, the issue of revenue from the Seaside Company? You've raised the question, but is there some suggestions and recommendations you have, Bruce?
Well, when you say what the people can do, no. I have no suggestions at the moment. There's nothing coming right up. I mean, what the people can do is urge their city council people and to elect. We got an election coming up next year.
420-5020 is the phone number of the city council in case you have a spare phone sitting around. They have a 24-hour voicemail, so if you want to call a council member and tell them you're concerned about tax the boardwalk, support a lawsuit that retrieves at least the parking area of the boardwalk and preferably more,
mm-hmm.
and then the third one is to address the Coastal Commission. Don't steal the access to, what do you call it, Gateway 6?
Public access to Gateway 6.
Gateway 6.
But see, Robert, another thing here now, if everybody listening this morning called the city council and got in touch with them, the city council people would tell them the same thing that they've been telling me. Like, well, gee, if you really knew how aggressive we are in the city council right now, boy, we're really going after that, and we're really going to solve that whole land ownership issue. So just relax. We've got it all under control, right? And so that's what happens if you call the city council. I would bet you bottom dollar.
Sure,
that's what they
agree.
Tell me.
I agree.
That's what they tell all of the folks that are interested in working on this. A lot of scrap members are working on this tide lands issue. And
I would say that, like, if you're interested in running for city council, it's which I having done it myself, it was a wonderfully educational experience, especially running against a master bullshitter like Mike Rodkin. The man has an incredible talent for stuffing content into a 30-second time slice, unlike myself, I'm very verbose, which doesn't work well.
Keep it short, Thomas.
But, you know, it's almost already too late. But the fact is that, like, you know, in a way, what happened the last time around, not when I ran, but in 2004, was that... And this happens all over the place in politics, is basically the people who chose to run wound up getting elected. And it was it was basically who was available. Well, you know, et cetera. So if you want to run, this is an important issue to you, there's the odd chance that, like, you know, people will look around and find you to be one of those acceptable individuals. And there's 4 seats up, I think, this time, right?
Well, I should know that. I don't know.
I think there's 4 seats.
Yeah, there are 4 seats mm-hmm. coming up. Mm-hmm.
And so that means that there's a lot of openings. And we have Mike Rockin and Cynthia Matthews running for re-election.
That's right.
So there's going to be at least 2 seats, which a certain segment of the community will regard as wide open.
Yeah, remember, we got rid of Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack.
Yeah?
Yes.
There.
I think Coral Brune and Morris picked him off, yeah.
Right. Whoever. Whoever.
So, so basically, if this is an important issue to you, if you think you could make do a better job than the people there now,
you could have said this very briefly, act early or you won't be able to have a meaningful effect on the election.
Exactly.
Now is what Thomas is saying, I think.
Like today's NAACP picnic is traditionally where you should be if you're going to run.
Really? Interesting. So, yeah. Bruce, you'll be announcing your candidacy there?
Never.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, politics is not everybody's bait.
I've always said that, you know, there's no sense in making a serious campaign for city council unless you have alternate staff and an alternate political mechanism by which you can get input from the public and support from the public.
Yep.
Once you're on the council, as well as when you're you know, running for council. You have to have, I think, a whole independent system of meetings and public processes, maybe some group like Scrap that was doing it, that was more open and didn't just take the politically correct segment of the community and the developers that it wishes to, you know, tete-a-tete with and so forth.
Well, it's a systemic issue that, like, the people who deal with city staff or the people who can afford to spend the time to deal with them would tend to be the wealthy and self-interested.
So in other words,
the city staff.
You need to have your own city staff, and they're not going to be the city staff that get paid. So you're going to got to find a lot of volunteers. You got to have a lot of money, or there has to be an upswelling of some kind of mass movement. What about rent control, Bruce? You are an advocate of rent control in Santa Cruz?
Sure, but I don't know anything about it, so I don't write about it.
What about the destruction of rent control at De Anza and Clearview Court? Did you write about that at all?
Just a bit. Yeah.
And, you know, I know that there was a real opportunity for them to stop the rent control destruction of De Anza, but to me, they were sold out from the...
Yeah, exactly. From the little bit I know. Now, right. You have to remember, when you're critiquing my stuff, and certainly I'm open for that, is that I'm a one-man operation. And, you know, covering as many areas as I do to try to keep the column as widespread, having more interest than just politics or just opera, means a lot of footwork and a lot of time. And so there's a lot of issues that appeal to me and a lot of issues I just don't have the time to go into. It's just a matter of that and a life, too. So that's why, I mean, on a lot of these things, it's something grabs me, something doesn't. I mean, I've been involved since 1970 in land use issues that go on and battles that go on 2 years, 7 years, and longer. I've been sued $121 million, you know. I got sued for libel.
Mm-hmm. You're doing better than me.
In the Wilder Ranch thing. That's one of my major heroic badges that I like to throw out there.
That was back in the 70s.
Yep.
The days when the current... reactionaries were all progressive.
The current reactionaries.
Rotkin and company.
Yeah, well, I don't know where they were. They weren't even.
What about
town.
The metro strike? That's coming up next week. I'm going to try to contact Bonnie Moore shortly of the United Transportation Union.
Right.
Union. What's your feeling? You support the strike? You don't support
the
strike?
Sure, support the strike. The little bit I know of it. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know that much about it. Uh-huh. But I'll tell you, I don't know that much about it, but I'm cramming all I can to learn about Rancho San Juan and Rancho San Benito, two cities that are proposed for our Monterey Bay. And I'm putting all that stuff into next week's column. I mean, thousands of homes coming in as a city. Here it is, folk, instant city. Mm-hmm. And with churches and schools and streets and all that stuff, and one is just off Highway 101 near Baranda Drive. I mean, these are big deals to me. And somehow land use, I guess because I moved to Santa Cruz, my first 15 years I lived on Swanton Road up in Davenport, land use and saving the North Coast has always been a big deal. And that's where, you know, that's the kind of stuff that grabs me the most.
Although, you know, even though you don't know much about the metro strike, you don't mind saying you support it. When I asked you about the sleeping ban, you said, oh, you just don't know. This is what the city council members like to say when you talk to them. Oh, we don't know what the solution is. Uh-huh. And you say, hold it. You favor arresting people for sleeping tonight. And they say, well, you know, we have liberal laws. They don't really arrest that much. They'll run through a whole series of weak-kneed responses that don't really indicate yes or no. I mean, they say yes, fundamentally. So I ask you a question again, and because I'm trying to get from you a sense of your opinion on this issue, and obviously I'd like you to print your opinion and go further if you found it... If I had an opinion. Yeah, if you had an opinion. You have no opinion on whether people should be arrested at night for sleeping.
Oh, yeah, I think they all should. Yeah, they probably, you know, put them in Guantanamo.
Round them up.
Yeah.
Well, at least we've gotten you clear on that issue.
No, but I mean, come on. You've been pushing. This is your one issue.
Well, I've
this
got
is
a couple
your,
of
this,
them.
Well, yeah, but overall, this is your long-time issue. This is the one that you have focused all the attention on yourself over for all these years. I keep going on to different issues, a lot of different ones. I don't have the time or the background to study one like you did. This one thing that you are so focused on. I'm not. Because I'm not focused on, one and then another and another and another.
So right now you have no answer at all to the question?
No. Okay. No answer at all to it. No. Whatever you say, hey, that's cool me.
Thomas, what do you think of this? Should we let Bruce off with that kind of an answer?
Well, you might as well. I mean, I'm not going to give you any other. I don't know any more about it.
If you got the stick, you got the paddle.
Oh, I think it's I think the conversation has been quite illuminating and interesting, and it's entertaining to see.
I should mention there's a business relationship between Bruce and Thomas.
I have a conflict of interest here, so
yeah,
got two cronies in the studio here.
Yeah,
and he does your website too, right?
What's that?
I would say that.
Well, there's a little
like,
bit of interest here. With
Yeah, it's true. But
I would say that. That when I ran for city council, Bruce was away, and
away.
You were like.
Not in print.
No, you were over. You were. I think you were still in print at that point. I'm not sure. But you were overseas in Europe or something?
I watched you at all those, all your dopey presentations at London and else. I was in Berlin for 2 weeks.
Did you vote? Hold on. Did you vote for
Thomas?
What's the
story? No, no.
Are you, see, a man who's honest.
Yes.
Thomas?
I wouldn't vote for you either. I mean,
he didn't vote for me either. And you wonder why I have this guy in the studio. No. Well, there's a small amount of remuneration happening.
Very small.
Very small.
I got a cup of tea out of this anyway.
Yeah, well.
Good tea, though.
Good tea's good. I'll give you some more. Let me take a breather here, unless, Thomas, is there anything specific?
No, let's take a breather.
You know, I'm going to play a little, since many people who are poor and homeless listening to the show are wondering, why are you having these fat cats from Swanton Road who are interested in environmental issues but couldn't give a shit about poor and homeless people, or at least haven't made up their minds
on the issue? Fat cats? Wait a minute.
Well, chunky cats.
Oh, like yourself.
Yes, like myself.
Right. But unlike yourself, I don't have a rich father living down in Pebble Beach.
He doesn't live in Pebble Beach.
What, Carmel?
In that general vicinity.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was on food stamps. I'm low-income senior now. So we don't need to talk about that.
I think we have to look about our associations and the positions we take. And so I think those who are concerned about, you know, I mean,
I'm a small business person, and I actually have business clients downtown.
And at the same time, you maintain your position on certain human rights issues, whereas others can't make up their minds because they haven't studied them enough after 16 years. So, I'm afraid I'm going to have to keep pressing on this issue because to me it doesn't sound. I mean, I understand one can have a different interest. One can say, I mean, I'm not terribly interested in land use issues except, you know, insofar as they are. Well, they have impact obviously on the public's right, and that obviously I'm concerned about. But I'm also concerned about those who are obviously most cut off from the most basic and elementary things. We can see this most obviously in places like New Orleans, where everybody suddenly gets cut off.
Underclass. Yeah. Did you read that in the morning paper, that new term? I had never heard about that.
I saw that article. Underclass. I didn't read the whole thing. I think Thomas noticed it. It was a cheesy piece of... that's not a sentence. The Sentinel is not getting much...
that was a very...
Yeah, I'm not going to talk too much about the Sentinel this morning. But, you know, then another issue I wanted to raise here is police misconduct. That's something I talk about a lot. Now, what's your feeling, Bruce? Is the police department pretty good? Is it, you know, got its problems? What's your sense about our Santa Cruz Police Department here, and then maybe about the sheriffs? Is there rampant corruption? Are there long-standing abuses that have not been addressed?
I don't know.
No. Okay. You haven't yourself been falsely arrested or otherwise harassed.
No. Mm-mm.
No. Yeah. Well, we can try to arrange that. Maybe I can get you,
well,
get you down.
Well, yeah.
Get you downtown.
Yeah, no, I'd go through it once anyway. Right, yeah.
Because I know that a person a block and a half away from where you were having coffee the afternoon I met you and you agreed to come on the show, for which thank you, by the way.
Certainly. You're welcome.
Was picked up for giving away his business card to people as he ran for city council and city council supervisors and the...
County Board of Supervisors. No, actually, he was running for Congress at that point.
Both. Yes. This is Chris Brozda. And Chris is a fiery, somewhat a monomaniacal character who has been held in psych wards and so forth. But he was picked up, and, you know, I'm concerned about how the police treat poor people downtown.
Yeah, I wish I knew what the full story was there.
Right.
It's very hard for me to imagine how they could justify picking up someone for handing out business cards declaring that he was running for political office.
Disturbing the peace was the charge that he was charged with. Who knows, maybe he'll be calling into the show at some point.
I would like to find out more details about
that. Anyway, I'm going to play some interviews from those people on the streets who I continue to hobnob with.
Uniquely.
What's that?
Uniquely. I mean, how many other media people of any sort...
Yeah, I'm
actually
pretty
unique. Walk downtown and actually talk with, you know.
Well,
the,
Bruce has probably had a few conversations with folks on the street. I mean,
record them and put them on.
But
the
he didn't
air.
Bring his tape recorder usually with that. So
I think that's a really beneficial and positive thing that you do.
But remember,
Robert,
if you've got questions, thank you, Thomas. And if you've got questions for Bruce, and you know, Bruce is willing to come in here and sit on the hot seat, and I try to make it hot because I think it's really important. I think he has a key position in the community. He puts out, he does what I don't do, which is quite impressive, a regular weekly column. He puts a lot of energy into it. It's well formatted. He's got the benefit of decades of experience in putting this kind of stuff together in a network of contacts. And so I urge him to address certain issues that he hasn't addressed, and I take him to task for not addressing those issues.
Although, actually, I would say, Santa Cruz is a system, and I think we talked a little bit about this. For whatever reason, some people won't talk to you because of me. Have you gotten that feedback?
This is when Thomas and Ganilla at www.godmama.com, if you want
unpaid
web design.
Commercial announcement.
I got the tea. I did get a cup of tea on this. I can't remember, Thomas. Yes, it's exactly what I told you, that people really are suspect and they see your name and my name connected because of conflict of interest. And because they really didn't like what you were, your positions running for the council and a lot of the things you've been saying lately, it's guilt by association. I mean, it's nothing more, nothing
and
less.
And so, exactly, and some of that comes from my association with Mr.
What's his name
Norris
over
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the system works in a certain way.
I have nothing to do with Brozda, so let's be clear about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So, I mean, it's. You do pay a price. And I'm certain that there's business that I sacrifice because we're associated with Bruce Braddon or because I'm associated with Robert. And, that's life.
Yeah. Well, let's take a
break.
And it's a small town. Yeah. Don't forget, it's a small town. So.
Yeah. And so if you got questions for Bruce or for Thomas or for me, but particularly for Bruce, because Thomas is, as I said, maybe... will hopefully be filling in for me as I fill out on the bologna sandwiches at the county jail starting in mid-October. Again, not a done deal and hopefully not going to happen at all. But Bruce is here in the studio, and it's an opportunity to talk to him because I guess you don't have a regular radio show.
No.
Are you interested
in
one?
Well, yeah, I do actually. On KZSC every Friday morning at 8 o'clock, I review films.
Okay.
On the Bushwhackers. Bushwhackers.
Are they Bushwhackers?
20 years that program has been on up there.
Wow. But that's not a live show?
It certainly
is. It is a live show.
John
okay.
Sandage and Dan Orange, and they do Whack Bush, and they've been doing it since his daddy was president. And they play a lot of music in between. And I come in at 8 o'clock and do movie reviews every Friday morning.
Right, but this is the opportunity to attack you on
a wide variety
of subjects.
Oh, yeah,
so if you want to get your licks in,
yeah,
call Bruce.
Except the homeless issue.
Yeah, kick him out. Kick him around on the homeless issue, too. Because
right.
maybe
put him on an island.
We can make him pay, so
right.
to speak. Here, however, is a couple of probably people who are homeless themselves, probably moaning, groaning, and complaining, as homeless people do.
All right, let's... Okay, it's about 8:20. We're down here at safe number 83. Is that right?
That's right.
83. And we're talking with the notorious...
Hot Rod John Rapport.
And Hot Rod, you have been hanging around the courts. How could you be so foolish?
No hanging. I'm taking care of business every day. And today I was waylaid because of a stolen bike trailer on the back of my junk bicycle. And they gave me a public nuisance along with... stolen property. So I went to, I couldn't find any court that had me, and so I went to the district attorney, and they said my case is pending.
You thought you had a court date, but you actually...
I did have a court date.
How do you know that?
Because when the cop brought me to the jail, I got a ticket, and he was going to put me in jail, but... My blood sugar was so high, 520, that they had brought me to the hospital immediately because they couldn't admit me over, I think it's 400, which is very high anyway, and I'm always high. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
So that's it. Mainly, I got a ticket, and the case is pending, and the guy offered me a $50 reward, and I told him, I said, well, prove it that it's stolen.
Wait a minute, $50 reward meaning...
Yeah, earlier than when the police were there...
If you return the cart that was in the back of your...
Right, and it was stolen who knows where. I got it at the flea market, but anyway...
So you mean he wanted you to give him this cart for $50?
He wanted to give me $50 reward. It's a to replace this bicycle cart. It's a one and only lonely thing that supposedly be worth $600 or $700.
So he wanted to take it off your hands and give you $50.
Yeah,
but it's worth $600.
Yeah, and I to make one. And I said, well, I can make one for less than that, but I need another trailer, you know. And he was the bicycle lockup guy at the Music in the Park deal. And I told him, I said, well, fine, just get me another trailer and $50 and let's call it even. But then the police got me for public nuisance, and there was a trailer, not a police having a trailer. Fine. But give me something.
So the police side of you for public nuisance at a different point? Or?
Yeah, all the time. We are a public nuisance right here.
For say the least.
Yeah.
So how do I keep us advised, Mr. Pending Guy?
Yeah, that's why they murdered Jesus. He was public nuisance, number one.
You'll have to take it up with
yeah,
Father.
The Holy Spirit.
we're talking with a man who has a green something draped about his shoulders, a big grin, and he's looking down on all of us. And he's dancing to the music. Now, you say that there have been some incidents of police, dare I say it, violence in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, quite a bit. Where do you want me to begin?
First of all, give us your name, sir. What shall we call you? Give yourself a moniker.
Green Man.
So, Green Man, where and when did all this happen?
I would say the occurring events pretty much come from the, gentrification, supported violence coming from, the city over, mostly intensely this past summer, noticing, various amounts of harassment, especially people sleeping in their cars, police directly waking them up, asking them for their identification, asking them to leave the city, being out of city limits, and it's actually just a waste of tax money because no one is going to go to Watsonville or Davenport just to go to sleep, and their tactics are absolutely useless because, yeah, no one is going to...
But you actually heard instances of police becoming violent around this?
Yes.
Give me an example of an account.
But there have been various raids. Harvey West was recently raided about 2 days ago up in Poconip, which is basically on the corner of, I'm thinking, Harvey West Boulevard and Ensenal Street, cornered off. That's where Poconip begins, and I've heard minimum of 10 busts up in Poconip in the middle of the night, approximately 2 days ago. I've heard reports of beatings. I've heard
by police. Any particular police officers involved?
I haven't heard. I don't know anything about police officers. There have been major reports of. It's basically a police state. There's a police presence, I'd say, every 5 minutes of the day in Santa Cruz, beginning in the summer.
You yourself sleep outside?
Yes, that's correct.
And have you yourself been hassled by police?
I've been hassled at least 6 times this summer. 4 times, I would say, about 2 months ago, living in my car, parked at various places such as Myrtle Street, Truscany Boulevard, off of Mission Street. There have been an increase of force I've noticed
against you or you
against me against the homeless.
And how is and be more specific? Like by that you mean somebody grabbed you or there were more cars?
There's not one word. It's more of a I'm slipping.
Okay, but we'll get you to gather your thoughts, or else we'll have to give you a good beating, all right? We'll be back.
Thanks.
Thank you, Green Man.
You're welcome.
Okay, it's about 9 o'clock. We're here down in front of Borders. We have a police officer standing by to guard the group, just in case anybody gets washed away by hurricane waters that have slipped out of New Orleans. And on the bench here is Dan Hemingway. Hi, Dan.
Hello there.
What's the word?
Well, the word lately is, a certain officer, his name starts with an A, gray hair, smooth face for gray hair, but Alderson, something like that, I forget. He's been trying to stop me and others from sleeping wherever they may be, whether they're on private property and have permission to be there or whatever. He's just been trying to stop sleep altogether down here and aggressively writing all of us tickets. And, you know, I had permission to sleep on a certain porch, and he would come right up there with no calls and just give me a ticket and then tell me to go and then follow me wherever I would go and try to give me another ticket for
sleep. When was the last time this happened?
2 days ago.
And about what time of the day did it happen?
It happens at night, usually when I'm about to go to sleep, anywhere from 8 to 10. And then he will do the same thing early in the morning if you manage to find a place away from him.
Has he explained to you why he is pursuing you in this way?
He just said he will give any of us tickets for anything he can if he sees it.
So he has a special affection for you?
For the homeless, for the poor, basically. He just said it's illegal to sleep outside, and he's going to make sure we don't do it.
And again, the name of this diligent officer is...
I forget. It starts with an A, Alderson or something like that. I forget. He's got gray hair and, you know, a pretty smooth face for having gray hair.
He's probably one of, you know, this man is obviously very diligent, very upstanding. You want to get his name and get the correct spelling as well.
Yeah, I have all that. If I didn't have a pinched nerve in my neck, I would reach for the paperwork now, but I'm just suffering just sitting here.
So this reign of... Yes. Well, this thing began to happen 2 nights ago, you say?
Oh, no, that was the last instance. It's been happening for the past week.
And how many contacts has he had with you?
About six.
And how many tickets have you gotten?
I've gotten two from him.
Well, what do you think accounts for the four contacts without tickets?
The fact that he said I was camping, but I wasn't even sleeping. I was sitting eating M&M's one time when he actually came up to me and said that I was camping. And I said, no, I'm sitting here eating M&M's. And he couldn't ticket me then. And then another time over by the library, I was sitting with some friends. And he came up and nobody was sleeping or had sleeping bags out or anything. And so he couldn't write a ticket then either. Pretty much the same thing. And I guess there is some limit on writing one ticket after the other in the same night for trying to sleep.
No, you're not.
So you've actually gotten two tickets in six encounters. What does he have other police officers with him, or is he alone?
Half the time he's alone.
When the other police officers are with him, how do they react to this?
That's usually when I don't get a ticket, is the case. They just tell us to pack our things and leave. It's usually when he's alone that he seems more freely oppressive.
Now, does he tell you where to go in terms of offer you a place to go?
He told me to go to a shelter, and I explained to him that there was none, and he had no answers after that, but he basically told me I should go to the shelter like everyone else, as if there is one for non-families that doesn't have...
You should build a shelter. Do you consider building a shelter at City Hall, perhaps?
Yeah, I just figure it like this, that if I'm not trespassing, if someone gives me the permission to lay down because it has to be done, then he should pretty much stay out of it and not trespass himself to do it, because he's forced me into actually trespassing and going into places that I'm not supposed to be to try to hide from him.
And how long has this hide-and-go-seek thing been happening?
Like I said, it's been about a week now of him just seeming to prioritize that, even during blackout times.
Now, what about here on Pacific Avenue? Have you gotten any kind of hassles along this strip?
From him, yes, I have. He actually told me I don't own a certain alcove when I was looking in a window at something in a shop up here, and told me I need to move along. And aside from that, I haven't had any other contact with him at all.
And how does he treat other people? Does he seem to have a special affection for you? Or?
He's been going into the Red Church where a lot of the homeless were sleeping and writing all of them tickets regardless. And he's been going into the library area and just everywhere I guess he can think of or getting leads on, as if he has nothing better to do but search for the sleeping.
Has anybody considered filing some concerns or complaints about this kind of behavior?
Well, like I was telling you before, it's very difficult when they refuse to give you even an appointment to see the watch commander without a callback phone that you can answer from.
Say that last again. I'm sorry.
Well, I was telling you before that I couldn't even get an appointment to see anybody's watch commander without having a callback phone that they can reach me at.
If you want, leave the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I will pass the word on to you when I see you. Of course, I also encourage you to get a Community Action Board cab voicemail, which you've probably been told before.
Yeah, but they won't take that. If I don't answer at it, then I'm not living there, they said. So basically, they don't want to help the homeless. At the same time, another tactic the police have been doing is a couple of my tickets went to warrant. They refused to take me to the jail because I'd get an early kick, even though I want to go to get it taken care of.
It's about 9:15. We have to do this again. Your name is?
Don Solano.
And you are?
Jennifer Lawson.
And the two of you, you mentioned, Don, and we didn't catch all this on tape. We're going to do it again, that you've been having some problems with Officer Pam Bechtel. And then, Jennifer, you said there's been police problems generally on the street, a general running folks away from town. But why don't we begin with what happened with Pam? You said that today you had an incident with her?
Yes, I did. And what was going on was me and my fiance Jennifer Lawson, we were panhandling, running, flying a sign in front of Palomar. And
What did the sign say?
The sign said, hungry, homeless.
Hungry and trying to get off the streets. Anything will help, and we appreciate your help.
And you are pregnant?
Yes, I am.
I won't insist you prove it at this time.
Okay,
we'll demand it, obviously, a fraud here. And so, and Pam Bechtel, the CSO, knew this, right?
No, she didn't know she was pregnant.
She didn't know this. Okay, go ahead.
And she.
For her to know something that's so personal.
You mind if it's mentioned on the air?
No, not at all.
Because we need to know what us as the homeless people that don't have a home are going through. The cops are running us off. We have no rights around here as free citizens of the United States that don't have a home.
A homeless person can't even get a job because they don't have an address. So how do they expect us to get an income, to get food and stuff like that, stuff that we need?
So, Jennifer, how long have you been in town?
My first time was about 4 months ago, and this is my second time being back in Santa Cruz.
Have you tried to get work here this time?
Yes, I have.
What kind of work were you looking for?
About 4 months ago, I actually did get a job at the boardwalk, but Don and I got an offer to get off the streets from a supposed friend of mine, and we took that instead. And since I've been back, I haven't been able to get a job because I don't have an address.
And you weren't able to get off the street?
Yeah. We can't get off the street because we can't get a job, so we're kind of screwed about that.
So, but again, getting back to this incident that happened this morning, what happened? Tell us more about that.
Pam told me and my fiance to separate. We can't panhandle together. And I explained to Pam that me and my fiance are a couple, and that we are panhandling as one. And basically, in her own facial expressions and her words, she said she doesn't care, and that we have to be 6 feet away from one another.
6 feet away from one another.
6 feet.
Not 3 feet, but 6 feet.
Not 3 feet, 6 feet.
So there's actually, we found, it's neither 3 feet nor 6 feet. It's in a group of two. But you said that you had previously been doing this together in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually were quite successful at getting money. But Pam said, did she suggest it because you were intimidating people that you got, you said, $60 some evenings before?
Yeah, Friday night. This past Friday night, we were in the same spot with the same sign. It was both of us. And we ended up getting enough money to get a room that night, and we weren't intimidating nobody. People actually came to us and asked us what was going on, our situation and stuff like that, and one guy actually gave us half of our money to get a room because we didn't tell our story out of pity. We just told our story for them to explain what's going on with us.
And what is your story? Let's say, I come over and say, what's cooking? Why are you panhandling?
We're expecting a baby. We're trying to get our life straight, and we're tired of being in this position. It's not the best life to live, and we just really want to get things straight because we're going to have a kid in about 5 months.
Yeah, and people usually ask, what about our parents? My dad disowned me when I turned 18, mm-hmm. So he's not behind me, and his mom gave him up when he was five. So both of us basically have
you're
no family.
Obviously bad to the bone. I can see that.
Well, not bad to the bone. It's just we see things differently from other people's point of view.
Confirmed criminals, obviously.
No. My record's perfectly clean.
I am sorry. I do have a felony aggravated assault with deadly weapon, but I got all that taken care of like 4 years ago, and I'm clear of everything. I get carted all the time by the cops, and they can't find anything on me. And I tell them, you ain't gonna find anything on me.
Yeah, in the past probably 6 months, we've gotten different police officers checking us, checking our background.
Here in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere.
So you say that you noticed a sort of a crackdown happening in Santa Cruz?
Yes, I came here 4 years ago, and when the hippie corner was here and everything was peaceful, you know, that was the best time right there. Now everybody, all the homeless is getting ran out of town because there are, you know, stupid people that like to bring attention to certain corners. Therefore, I don't kick back at them.
We're talking about the corner across from the metro? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the main ones, yeah. Meth has gotten a lot. It's out here everywhere. It's gotten,
even at this corner here in front of Borders?
Or? Not sure about that. This is my first time hanging out in front of Borders.
No, it's not this one, though. Because I used to hang out here all the time, and I know that everybody that hangs out on this corner in front of Borders is people who are trying to stay away from the bad stuff.
Anything you want to say to Free Radio folks while we've got our ear?
Just beware of the cops. Don't let them take advantage of you. They'll run you down if they see your weakness. I don't show my weakness, therefore the cops don't like me. And to put it to you blunt.
Most of the people in Santa Cruz, just because you see a homeless person doesn't mean that we're not equal. The only difference is they've got money and we don't. That's the only difference. We're still human. We still have our problems, just like the people walking around with money have their problems. And that's really the only difference is the money.
We've been talking with Jennifer.
Oh, Jennifer, I'm sorry.
You are Jennifer. And
yeah.
Don Solano.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
We're talking with, what's your name?
Thomas Robb.
Thomas, you said you were doing your laundry. When was this?
Well, they insisted that I was loitering
cocaine. Right.
And I wasn't. So then one of the cops got me right here with the club.
Pointing to your neck.
To the car. Then they took me to jail and put a hood over my head.
And what happened then?
Then they threw me in a cell with no clothes on for 3 days. They took me to court and there was no charges.
So, let me run through this again. You remember what day it was that this started? Today is Wednesday night. When was this? When did you get picked up?
No. I just fucked out Sunday. I stand there and this car fucked up and go, where's the dope?
Right, but what day were you picked up? Do you remember? Or do you remember, was it Wednesday? Today is Wednesday. How many days ago?
No, I don't remember what their name was. They identified themselves.
Right. Now, where was this?
And my friend started to walk outside and tell me, hey, dude, this guy's not scoring dope. And he pushed my friend back. Don't shut up. We'll take you to jail with him.
Where was this?
It was, today is Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Today's Wednesday.
And so it happened Saturday.
Happened last Saturday? And where were you?
I don't know. But
where were you when they picked you up? Was it near a laundromat? Or?
Yeah, they started beating me up for no reason.
And
then they kept all my clothes. When they let me out of jail, I had to go buy clothes and stuff. I had $40 on me, and they told me, you didn't have no money. And
you remember
I was with my backpack and stuff, and they said, you didn't have no backpack. So I asked to talk to the lieutenant. I said, sir, I had clothes when I checked in. I had money. He said, if you don't shut up and get out of here, I'm going to book you again.
Now, do you remember the names of any of these guys? And do you remember where you were when you were picked up? Like, was it Beach Flats? Was it in Pacific Avenue? Where did you get picked up?
Well, because I was so hot here, and they wouldn't tell me nothing.
Right, but where did this happen?
They just kept me in jail for like 3 or 4 days. Then they took me to court. And
did you go before a judge?
They put my hands way up like this. When they arrested me, they put my hands way up like that. Way up. And I couldn't even
pull your arms behind your back. Now, you don't remember where you were arrested, or you do?
He wouldn't tell me what his name was, badge number, nothing.
Right, but I mean, where did you get arrested? Do you remember where you were in a laundromat doing your clothes? And you remember where was that?
No, he insisted that I was trying to loiter for cocaine. I went and done my laundry.
Where was the laundromat?
Yes.
But where was it? Where was the laundromat?
It was on Brushy Street.
Okay. And about what time of day was it? Evening, day, night?
I don't know. They were just beating me up so bad I didn't know anything.
And what exactly? Where did they hit you?
Yeah.
Where did they hit you?
On Brushy Street.
Right. But where on your body did they hit you?
I don't remember.
In other words, what?
We'll see my shoulder.
You're pointing to your right shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then when I asked to see the nurse,
you couldn't.
They kept saying, shut up, shut up, shut up. And then when I tried to talk to the cop, they put a hood over my face.
For how long?
I couldn't breathe or anything. I started sweating and stuff.
For how long was the hood on? For how long was the hood on? Do you remember?
I was acting in fear of my life, man.
Right. But for how long? Was it for an hour, 2 hours, three hours? Do you know? Okay.
I was acting in fear of my life.
Hey, Chris. Hold on.
Yeah, and a bacon ladder up on Sucal. Cow, the booking slip. There's no charges on the booking slip.
Can you show me the paperwork? So, Tom, you say you've never been beat up before.
Man, it was just like I was being jumped by a gang. It's just like they rushed me all of a sudden, and the cop walked up and asked me about cocaine.
And we're going to hear more about that in a moment, but we have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Thomas, Bruce, and, got another caller, too. Hi, caller.
Yes, hello, Robert. This is Pebbles.
Hey, Pebbles.
Did I call back?
Can you call back in about half an hour?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
And I'll take this caller. Hey, caller. Hi there. We're about Labor Day weekend being her opening day at some point.
Over at Harvey West Park?
Over at Harvey. Yeah, this is Lisa.
Hmm.
When and if she calls in. There we go. I think that's it. Yeah. Hi, Lisa.
Yeah.
Ah, we got you.
Hey, Robert, how you doing?
Good. Have you been listening to the show, or are you just traveling around?
We don't actually get you up here in Boulder Creek.
No. Oh, okay. Well, on the line with us, I should say, in the studio with us is guest Bruce Bratton and wannabe talk show host Thomas Levitt.
Well, hello.
Good morning.
And Lisa, Bruce writes his own online column, and he used to write for the Metro Santa Cruz and the Sentinel, and he's been a radio broadcaster.
Good times, good times.
And he looks like a pretty attractive guy. You might want to, well, of course, it depends on your sexual preference.
Shall I hurry down?
Well, you're always welcome here, particularly if you bring some of your products with you.
Easy, about the sexism charges there. Remember?
Well, sexy, not sexist. That's
you brought it up.
Yes. So, Bruce here is going to keep me in line. So, hi. What's the word on Greenway? Your upcoming club?
Well, we're through all of the city stuff, but the fire department has to respond. That's where I'm stuck, and I'm going to go and visit them Tuesday to find out what the response is going to be.
Uh-huh.
And everybody else has replied, I believe, with an approval. The city attorney, of course, has a few issues that he wants me to change in my operations manual, which I had to you know, write for them so that I could prove that I was meeting the criteria of the Chapter 6 code. But it's all pretty minor. So I was shooting to open Tuesday, but it might, I'm hoping to open by Thursday, Friday of next week at the latest. So we've been getting things going. So I haven't been ignoring you. I just keep forgetting because it gets pushed out of the way somehow.
I think we have a caller who is also on the line, but I can't guarantee that either she can hear us or we can hear her. Caller, can you hear us?
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm afraid that... Sorry about that. Can you hear us?
I haven't been ignoring you.
Yeah, I think that's... hey, don't listen to your... Turn off your radio. It's delayed. Hello?
Caller, can you hear us?
Yeah, no. That's me. You don't want to hear me.
That delay or something.
Yeah, turn off your radio. Turn off your computer. Throw it away. Send it to New Orleans. They can use it there. All right, you're going to have to try back.
Okay, it's weird that you can hear my radio, but you can't hear me.
Yeah, no, I can hear you now. But turn off your radio. You have to turn off your radio because we're hearing it on the air, and it's we're all getting very crazy here. There we go. Still there? Hello?
I'm here.
Hey, Lisa, you're still with us. Okay.
I'm still here.
So you haven't called me back, and I've thought of, you know, some kind of suicidal gesture.
Yes.
Hang
on. Now you got a dial tone.
Now we're good. Okay. So we still got you. So
yeah, I want you to know it's not for.
Yeah. Still there?
Been really full of taking care of issues and, you know, getting alarms installed and.
Right.
Cleaned.
So the Labor Day opening is going to have to be delayed, eh?
Well, yeah, I was shooting for that, and I went down to the city, and they kind of said, well, you know, we have to have the fire department has to approve this still. So I walked down to the fire department, and it's the administration offices, and they closed right when I got there, so I didn't get to deal with it last week.
Now, had you been told before that the fire department had to deal with it?
I think that's normal for any business that's getting a building permit.
Uh huh. So you were warned. It wasn't they weren't just suddenly springing this on you.
Is this
permit, I knew the package was when I put in for the building permit. It all got sent out to the fire department, the police department, public works. I think everybody gets a copy, and then it all comes back, and the building department has approved, and the planning department has approved with. Me changing some stuff in my manual, which I'll give to them Tuesday.
And the police department?
And they have approved.
And Thomas here has a question for you.
Is it a building permit for construction, or is it an occupancy permit?
It's an occupancy. We're not doing anything really to the building, so.
That's interesting, because I've had several businesses and pulled business licenses, and I've been able to occupy my building before the fire department actually made an inspection. In fact, I don't think I...
Well, the difference might be that we have security gates and such in the building, and they have to be able to... They've changed where my gates are located, which is good, because it's cut back on what it cost me to put them in.
Huh.
Because they don't want too many gates in the way, but I think it's because we, you know, it's kind of a special... It's a special use permit with some, you know... hanging criteria that the city council gave everybody, so I think it's a little out of the normal.
So things are proceeding. You aren't being, even though the police department weighed in against you at the hearing, nonetheless, they've okayed it, given that the city council's okayed, and you're just waiting for the fire department okay?
Right. And I don't know if they come by to do an actual inspection. Rudy Escalante came by for the police department, and we spoke for quite a while. And he said, you know, he was very nice. He worked with me on it, and he actually helped me make it a little better for security, and then a little bit cheaper for my pocketbook.
Good.
And he told me that he had approved it. Now, Mike Ferry also told me that he had gotten approval. So it's just an issue of, yeah, me changing some stuff in my manual and then the fire department doing their approval.
So when do you have the star-studded, pot-filled... opening day barbecue?
Well, actually, now that because it's been a floating target, I kind of set the date on Saturday the 17th, but I'm going to open actually before that, I believe, and then the barbecue will be like maybe the week later.
Because I know that the V-Man is interested in interviewing you. Have you talked to him yet?
No, I just wrote all that down yesterday, and I meant to call you last night and let you know that I'll give him a call. But,
okay.
I definitely am interested.
Yeah, the V-Man does a great show, and he's... hey, hopefully, you know, he'll be covering you nicely. I, of course, will do the colorful side of it, and he'll do the official side of it. You know,
we like the colorful side too.
Oh, cool. Well,
I'm going to Becky and I have penciled in a date for October 19th, actually, for a
television show.
Yeah.
And I guess Bruce here, not to be left out, needs to have some kind of access. Say hello to Bruce. Say hello to Lisa. Lisa, say
good
hello
morning.
To Bruce.
Good morning. Yes, I really can empathize with you about starting a business, especially this business. I mean, any business owner that I've ever met goes through, you know, living hell to open just a normal business. But boy, what you are challenging the system with here, whew, boy, you must be really up against the wall forever.
Well,
and you will
I'm,
be
I'm
after you open too.
I'm way past the point where I can turn back, so...
Good for you. Good for you.
So
we're fully in the water now, and I'm going, and it's, you know, it was a little bit of a hassle, but, you know, just one thing at a time. You just have to take each challenge as it comes up, and each time I tried to look at the big picture, I just kind of freaked out.
Thomas has a question for you, Lisa.
Yeah, where is your facility actually located? What's the address so that people who...
it's 140 Dubois Street. That's D-U-B-O-I-S, and that's out by Harvey West Park, behind Costco.
Is there a public transit anywhere near there?
There's three bus stops, yeah. There's one right across the street from us, and then there's two on either corner of our street, one at Harvey West Boulevard and then one at Encinal.
Do you know what the numbers for those are?
No, I don't, but that's a good point. I should go look those up.
And are you going to have a website?
Yes, I am, actually. I'm just now trying to get that together.
He's looking for your business, godmama.com. Go for it.
Does trades, too.
Yeah, the reason I mention it on free radio, which doesn't take commercial advertising, is that Thomas provides a great deal of a public service for the community and is also kicking me $50 under the table. Thank you, Thomas.
Oh, good for you, Robert.
Just kidding about the $50.
So, I'll make sure that all that stuff is on the website, including the public transit information and the bus, because I think a lot of people who need this are going to be taking public transportation to get there.
Right, and that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that, but that's pretty much what the website would contain is information. And probably, you know, I'd probably try to do some links to other websites, like Americans for Safe Access. And
so are you going to be, like, documenting all the stuff that you've gone through in order to get this actually through the bureaucracy, et cetera, so that, you know, other people in the future might have an easier time of this?
I was actually going to do a video documentary type, just sit down and talk about it and then maybe edit it from there, but... I've got quite a bit of it in written form already that I've kept, but it's a good idea, and I intended to, like, play some of that in the lobby on monitors while people are waiting around, because it's not just the information on how we got this far, but how everybody should, you know, respond respectfully so that we keep our permit.
That's cool.
But I also would like to start documenting patient information. I want to do this if the city will let me have a room where patients can go in and document their own cases.
That's cool.
You know, which could be a lot of information, but be edited into all kinds of information. And it's not out there now. Nobody knows, you know, what kind of medications people are replacing with marijuana.
That's great. I really appreciate
it. It's all needed, I think.
We just talked to, actually an hour or two ago, we talked to Christine of Area420.com. Are you familiar with them?
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're really, they're blocked over in San Jose. So you may be getting a number of people from the second largest city in California coming over the hill because you'd be the closest club. Except,
well,
yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. If I were in San Jose, I'd probably come this way myself rather than going out towards the East Bay or... into the city, so it's a traffic problem. But I know that there are people talking to somebody down in Santa Clara actually trying to work it out with somebody. I don't know who that person is, but...
So,
We'll see. The more there are that operate with a permit, the better it is for everybody that's in this movement.
Now, again, so you're likely to be opening on the 17th, did you say?
That will be the date. I'm hoping to actually open before that. I want to hold up the opening for the barbecue.
Now, will you be at the Wham Fest this weekend, next Saturday?
I don't know. Probably. I mean, I'm going to be in town for sure, because I think we're going to open. So.
Maybe Valerie will deign to mention that your club is opening. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Oh, that would be cool. I should call and talk to Val and find
definitely.
Out.
I mean, I would assume she will. Also,
it has been a floating target. I've tried to set dates, and they get blown by the city, but...
Yeah, but it looks like you got the police department on board, you got the planning on board, you're moving there.
Oh yeah, I'm there.
What's your phone number for those who want to call in and reserve a few buds?
The phone number at Greenway is going to be 831, of course, 420, of course, 1640. That's the main line.
420-1640 for those who want to get in touch. And it's open. It's available now for them to make initial contact or not?
There's a voicemail on it. I'm going to purchase a phone today. That's where I was driving.
Gotcha.
Right now to buy a phone and a computer.
Wow. And, of course, this is pretty much almost a one woman, maybe with your partner, a two-woman operation. I mean, you're not... Are you getting a lot of other people doing legwork for you, or is this you alone?
Running it?
Well, just setting this whole thing up, all the work for the last year to get the city off its gaduba.
It's been pretty much...
Say it again. Your phone's breaking up.
It's been me mostly. Cindy, my partner, has been helpful, but all the work has pretty much been done by me.
Yeah, well, amazing.
Well, yeah, and I don't know how I haven't stressed out and lost it yet, but...
I think is that the edge of hysteria I hear in your voice? I don't think so. I think you're just
chuckling. No. And, you know, the reason it doesn't is just because I take it one step at a time, and, you know, maybe I took it a little longer in the long run, but it was the proper way. All the questions have been answered, and, you know, once we open, it's all on the up and up, and everybody can feel comfortable and safe when they come to visit Greenway.
So how do you expect to deal with, the DEA, et cetera? I mean, do you have any plans for when they storm through your front door? Not that they've done this in a lot of places, but they did raid Wham a while back.
With the help of the city police and the sheriff's deputies, of course.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know that you can actually plan. I do have, you know, lawyer support, so... And I have the ACL Drug Policy Reform Project is on my side, and have offered, you know, to be some part of defense also. But, you know, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. They haven't really gone around busting legitimate clubs, so, you know, I'm hoping they'll just forget Greenways over here in Santa Cruz and look for those that aren't operating legitimately, actually. So I'm hoping that the permit, you know, although it's not much protection, it does say that, you know, we're part of the system.
Well, hallelujah.
I don't know how much protection that affords, but I'm willing to push the edge and try to make it much more acceptable and accessible for those that need it. Because I'm one of those people, and I get pissed off when I see others trying to make a decision for me, and that's not fair.
And so I'm aware... That, from Robert's things and other places, you have a number of limitations on what you can do with your facility at this point, and which you're hoping that, like, by good behavior, so to speak, on the part of your customers, that will gradually be lifted. What can we in the community do to, like, you know, encourage the city to, loosen up a bit and facilitate your ability to, like, have, like, a broader range of services?
Perhaps share a joint with Cynthia Matthews?
Cynthia won't talk to
Well, they have got a six-month jail sentence, you could call it, but it's not, you know, they made me focus on dispensing for the first 6 months, and in some ways it's made my job easier to not have to think of all the other aspects, but if everything goes well for 6 months, then what the community and the patients can do is, you know, follow the criteria that we'll lay down for them when they come to visit us. You know, no loitering and that kind of stuff. And that will keep us open. And I guess, you know, that's, we just have to make it through the 6 months. And if we do, the doors will open much wider. And I've been told that by most of the city council members and the planning department. But we just have to make it through the first 6 months. And then we can do a whole lot more with services for patients.
That may actually work in your case, although I think frequently it's a mistake to trust what the city council says. But
well, so far we've worked together, and I have to just
yeah,
say
in your
in
case,
that.
As I said, it may be an exception.
Right.
Lisa, thank you. I'm going to roll along because I got Pebbles from Mendocino will be calling in soon. Bruce here has been, you know, listening to us chatter on, and he is the star here. I don't know why he's being ignored or sidelined, possibly
Thanks,
a brutal
Bruce.
Assault on my part. Yeah, and I guess Bruce may want to get in touch with you. I guess he can call you at that number, right?
Yeah, give him my cell phone. I think you have this number.
Yeah, I'll
Which
give him.
Put it on the air.
Catch me
done,
after Bruce.
And
give you your cell
too.
Phone number. Sounds good. Thank you, Lisa, and you know, Greenway on is all I can say.
Yeah, and I promise I'll call you and give you an update on Tuesday after I speak with the fire department.
Cool. I appreciate that. Maybe we can get you back on Thursday, possibly in the studio.
And maybe we'll be open. Wouldn't that just be incredible?
Yeah, that'll be amazing. And,
I could
come
from our first day closing and go to your radio show.
Then we can work on tax and regulate and deal with actual drug abuses in the Santa Cruz County Jail, where you know liberals and progressives fear to tread, that sort of thing. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks for doing your show, Robert.
All righty, bye bye. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. In the studio, Bruce Bratton, Thomas Levitt, and me. We're also on pagesincolor.com. You can call in. Unfortunately, we had a line problem, but I think we're okay now. 427-3772. Well, we're okay on that line. I don't know about the other line. We'll see how that one works. Bruce.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Bruce
mm-hmm.
Bratton, guest of the day.
hey, I'm not staying over, though.
Well, it's no. Camping is illegal at night, and since you don't know whether that should be illegal or not,
right.
We don't want to continue any discussion. Hey, but before I return to you, we have another caller who no doubt will have a question for you, perhaps. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Bruce, Thomas, and Robert.
Hello, Robert. It's Bruce and everybody.
Hey. Hey, John.
This is John Tilkin, Human Rights Organization.
Human Rights Organization.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you had a few minutes where I could read the letter that Mike Rotkin sent to the Human Rights Organization and our response to it.
Bruce, you got a few minutes for this?
I will stay over.
You can give us some pungent comments as well, possibly.
Put a sleeping bag over there.
And maybe a joint or two. You know?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead there, John.
Okay, this is the letter that Mike Rotkin sent to Mr. Bernard Klistner and others at the Human Rights Organization. Says, "Dear Mr. Klistner and others, I am sorry that I've taken so long to respond to your letter of July 11th, 2005. You raised four issues that were discussed in our meeting earlier this year. With respect to the first, the level of fines for camping, etc., in the city, I have no interest in changing the fine structure at this time. And what that refers to is we asked them to lower the fines from, I think it was $20 as a city share down to $10 so that the
final fine would
final amount would be $54 instead of $80.
$90.
Anyway, although I know that your organization is under the impression that the large numbers of people are being caught up in sweeps of the homeless in Santa Cruz, the fact is that relatively small numbers of people are actually charged with violations of these ordinances. Since the council policy of only enforcing the camping ordinance on a complaint basis has been in place, we have never cited more than an average of one person a night. And that's their claim, that they are citing on a complaint basis, but I don't have any independent confirmation of that. But anyway, most months the level of citations is less than half that number. For example, last month there were 9 citations. In effect, people get these citations when they ignore clear warnings that they are camping in an illegal place or when they refuse to move on when warned by the police. As you know, there is no other city in the country where people are allowed to sleep out in public areas, and I have no interest in our community becoming the national solution, quote-unquote, to the homeless problem. We do far more than most communities to address the issue, even if the response is far from adequate. However, further advances in solving the problem will depend upon regional and national action to a greater extent than decisions by the City of Santa Cruz acting on its own. Second paragraph. Second, having discovered no complaints about the current ordinance that allows individuals to sleep in the driveway of a private residence in their vehicle, that is, for up to 3 days, with the permission of the residents, and with the permission of the owner, by the way. I intend to bring a proposal to the City Council to extend that permissive period to 10 days. That is, he's going to extend it to 10 days instead of 3 days. I will be doing this in September or October, and a side note on my part is that that's pretty courageous considering he's going to be reelected, presumably in November. Anyway, frankly, the one thing
there's
that
no
makes,
election in November, John.
Yeah. Huh?
There's no election.
No
in
election
November.
In this November.
That's
this next November. Okay. Mm-hmm. Frankly, the one thing that makes this the least attractive to me is the knowledge that putting this issue on the council agenda will create a huge public controversy, no doubt, stir up anti-homeless sentiment, and what is worse, provide an opportunity for you and your supporters to unfairly attack and insult the council, spread misinformation about our community's commitment to the homeless, etc. But my commitment to trying to alleviate at least some suffering of homeless individuals overrules my concerns about how you will conduct yourself at our public meeting, something over which I have little, if any, control. Now it's on to the second page. Okay. Third point is we do our best to generally have oral communications at 7 o'clock p.m. or whenever the council meeting starts. If we have a late start because the afternoon session runs over at all regular city council meetings. For some reason, this past spring, we had an inordinate number of meetings with no evening session. And in order to allow the public a chance for oral communication, we did set the time as the last item in the afternoon session or at 5 o'clock p.m., whichever came first. I do not think that this is likely that many meetings will not have evening sessions in the upcoming years. I will continue to do my best, as will future mayors, I'm sure, to be as clear as possible about when oral communications are scheduled, when they are unavoidably at some time other than the regular 7 o'clock p.m. time on the second and fourth Tuesdays of each month. And this last point is, finally, I have no legal requirement to share and no interest in sharing my personal schedule with you. No doubt you would love to hear about a series of public and private events you could disrupt with protests over issues unrelated to the events in which I participate. You have more than adequate access to me at public council meetings, and as you well know, I'm always happy to schedule meetings with your group or any other if you would like to have serious dialogue about city issues. I will come to your meetings / events as I have often in the past, or be pleased to meet with you as I have often done in the past at City Hall. All official city events are, of course, well noticed formally by the city and informally by various media in our community. And these events are open to you as they are to all citizens and residents of Santa Cruz. The mayorship in Santa Cruz is not compensated or organized as a full-time job, although it often takes 40-plus hours a week. I have two other jobs, one full-time and one part-time, and my personal calendar is not maintained by the city staff or at any city expense. It is not a public document. Thank you for your interest in the various city issues discussed above. If you have further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Sincerely, Mike Rodkin. So that's his letter to us.
So that's also a letter hopefully we can post on...
Yeah, I can post that on Indie Media or maybe on Pages and Color or something. And let's see. We wrote a response to him, which is about a little over a page, double-spaced. It says, Mayor Mike Rodkin, thanks for your commitment to bring the proposal to the City Council.
John, you know, we're going to have to hold off on that for the moment. Can you call back? We have a caller calling in from Northern California.
Okay. When do you want me to call back?
About half an hour.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. I hope we can get the things. Well, Bruce, you're getting a lot of public comment time in here. Like, this is like City Council here.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments on anything you wish to make? Anything you want to put out on the air yourself about public issues that you think people should know about that's upcoming in the next week that is time-sensitive that people need to know about?
That time-sensitive? I don't know. There's 100 issues that are always going on. There always are that many issues going on, especially in the city of Santa Cruz, as well as the county of Santa Cruz. And I would, as I was saying to you off air, I would like to hear, and somebody could call in, I hope, to let us know if they know of anything being done for New Orleans, anything local being done for New Orleans. I've had a couple entertainers call in and say, hey, if there's a local show going on as a benefit, we want to partake. And I know another group that's trying to raise money to buy a truck or two and fill it up with goodies to take down there.
Do we have a caller calling in, although I'm afraid that this is probably our caller from... this is Pebbles, I'll bet. Hey, Pebbles. Is that you?
Moving along.
Hey, Pebbles. We have a crowded show today. In the studio with us is a columnist, Bruce Bratton. If you want to look at his stuff, he's at brattononline.org. Bratton.
We're not organized. It's com.
He's
common.
A commie. He's a commie type.
Common.
He's common. Common. Brattonon.
Online,
all one word, .com. I'm orgish myself. So I know, Pebbles, you are active up in Mendocino, working with Medical Marijuana Patients Union up there, struggling with repressive legislation from the city of Ukiah.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce, by the way, is interested, and maybe, of course, you're in Mendocino County. You probably can't help us, but for those who want to... call in who are listening to the show generally, Bruce has just put out an appeal for information about how can Santa Cruzans do something and help some organization other than the rip-off Red Cross, which I will talk about in greater detail later on,
mm-hmm.
Who like to separate homeless people into the pre-disaster homeless and the post-disaster homeless. And
The Mendocino Veterans for Peace are there, and we know them personally. One of them is a patients union member, in fact, several.
Right. The problem with, of course, getting any information for you is you're, 400 miles to the north. And
no, actually, more like 250.
Oh, really?
Or 225, yeah.
Right, you are. Okay. But you're probably a bit out of range of folks who find it hard to, fill up the gas tank
and
get across town.
We need to figure out how to network in such a way that we're effective and relevant.
Right. So, can you give us a really short update today?
I was calling about New Orleans.
No, okay. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because actually, we haven't talked about that, and I've got stuff I wanted to read about New Orleans. I'd also like to hear what my guests have to say on the subject.
I can just, it's just some thoughts I have over these days. My idea is that we all take a trip down to New Orleans, where the legacy of slavery lives. It breaks my heart to see this sea of suffering black faces in news accounts, but it enlightens my mind to know the truth, which is that the U.S. is rotten when it comes to race.
And poverty. Come on.
Yes, of course.
Although, it's
just that when they go together, it's really stinking. It's as rotten as the rotting corpses lying face down in pools of water throughout the city.
And the rotten levees that broke because they wouldn't spend the money on them, and the rotten administration that had most of the National Guard had a third of the National Guard from Louisiana over in Iraq.
In Iraq?
Right, and his solution now, instead of dealing with rescue, is to start ranting about looters and protecting property. I know Bruce had something to say about that earlier. Bruce, you want to roll on that one a little bit? Hang on a sec. Pebbles, this is Bruce. Bruce is Pebbles.
Yes, good afternoon now. No, I was just thinking, again, it's one of the problems of the media and our present Bush administration, too, to start focusing and filming the looting going on. And, I'm just overwhelmed here at the thought that they would even bother mentioning looting. And they're not looting. That merchandise has been long written off on insurance policies. It's in totally covered. It would have been thrown away. Help yourselves, folks.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure you could run away with a color TV, but didn't have any place to put it, unless it floated. But, I mean, all that other stuff, who cares about looting? If these people, we weren't helping them through the government, if they can help themselves, great, go for it. I mean, that's bizarre to put one more scene on there and armed soldiers standing with guns while these people walking out with T-shirts and bottled water. Uh-huh. Big deal. I mean,
and killing people, too.
Absolutely. I mean, the message is don't rely on the government. It is unreformable.
Tom.
I mean, pull together to pull it together. I wish they had their musical instruments with them so they could sing as they waited. You know, everything is wiped out, and so they go take a piece of clothing from somewhere or a television to get by with.
Thomas has a comment here, too. Go ahead.
Well, actually, you know, it seems like the people of New Orleans are being treated like... you know, the people in Iraq, they're being presumed to be dangerous and terrorist. I heard a couple of accounts yesterday of this one guy who heard that this woman was being, like, raped and assaulted, and he went out and he tried to get the attention of the police, you know, and they ignored him, and he jumped on the vehicle to, like, try and get them to stop, and they just shot him. And in this other account of this family, who this 16-year-old boy was just walking across the street and wound up getting killed, I guess because somebody interpreted him as a threat. And they were interviewing his family while his body lay there on the street. You know, it's horrifying. And at the same time, you know, what she just said, this is the right wing. This is... New Orleans is an ideological triumph for the right wing of this country, precisely because their goal is to get you to believe that government cannot be effective, to get you to be more cynical and more skeptical of government, to get you to believe that that government can't do anything. And it's a it's called drowning the baby. They want to drown the baby. Now it's happening literally. They're drowning babies. And every time that we react as the government is unreformable, which it probably is, but every time we see the right wing wins, because they want us to believe that the only thing to do is to downsize the government, eliminate it, etc., and the government has no role.
No, I didn't. I don't mean to say that. I just said don't rely on it.
Yes.
That doesn't mean don't cooperate with it. It doesn't mean don't try to find wedges. Don't try to find politicians in there. You know, one out of a thousand who may be principled.
We need to be careful when we talk about this.
Help it along wherever possible. Let them run after us. Let's not run after them. That's the lesson of the Vietnam War movement. They came after us because we were independent, did not support either side, and were stopping the government from doing something with a certain method that ultimately worked. So I agree with you to not... When I say it's unreformable, I don't mean to totally give up on it, just mostly. I mean, they're doing something right with the medical marijuana issue because the voters forced them to. And so they will come along.
You're talking about the state government.
The state government, yes.
Yeah,
the state government.
I think and compared to what they could do and should do, they're doing so little.
That's
I don't
right.
know if you're going to say anything doing right. And finally getting the California Highway Patrol to agree to stop confiscating medical marijuana, which happened a couple of weeks in the last week or two, I suppose. You know, it's a victory, but it's, again, getting them not to engage in abusive behavior. It's not really getting them to do something right. Let's be clear about that.
Years. They knew it was wrong all along.
No, I mean, it's not getting them to do something right in a positive sense. It's getting them to stop
doing something
stop beating on us.
Yeah. Right.
One of the questions that Bruce here asked earlier is, how can people help? And I don't, I came kind of armed with this thought. I got a note from Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, uh-huh. who's actually operating out of Arizona, just as you're distant too. He was urgently, they're going to take a caravan there, and they're going to, they want people to donate groceries and food or money at foodnotbombs.net. or mail checks to Food Not Bombs. You can go on the Food Not Bombs website. Their Food Not Bombs chapters in New Orleans and Biloxi have been wiped out. Groups in Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Jackson, Pensacola, Memphis, and other southern cities are feeding people fleeing the disaster. Food Not Bombs is ready to help tens of thousands of people who have been made homeless by the storm. And so that's one group. I suggest people go to foodnotbombs.net. Another thing that I wanted to point out, I dissed the Red Cross a minute ago, and I did so on the basis of my own experience in 1989 in Santa Cruz, and also the story I just recently read from Randy Shaw, which is previously he was a writer for the Chronicle. I think they fired him or something, or he's not involved there anymore, but or maybe he is. But he also writes for a thing called Beyond Cron, which is an interesting website you can go to if you want to get critical left-wing critique of the Chronicle. And he writes an article, "While President Bush joked and strummed a guitar, Hurricane Katrina brought devastation to low-income African-American communities in Mississippi and Louisiana with state and National Guard members dispatched to Iraq. Much of the burden of reducing the human misery will fall upon relief agencies, most prominently the American Red Cross. Unfortunately, as San Franciscans learned after the 1989 earthquake, the Red Cross feels no obligation to spend money raised from a particular tragedy for the purpose the funds were given. The agency tried to walk away from San Francisco with more than a $10 million profit, and those contributing to hurricane relief should donate elsewhere. American Red Cross has become synonymous with tireless volunteerism in response to national disasters. But San Francisco has learned in 1989 that there is a steep financial cost to this volunteerism and that those seeking to help disaster victims should target their assistance to more deserving agencies." And the website that he gives, it's a longer story, but I got you on long distance here. I'm not going to hold you up for it, is www.networkforgood.org. And then I guess once you get there on networkforgood.org, look for you got a whole host of agencies. The real question we have in Santa Cruz, of course, and Bruce is asking, and I will open up the phone lines too when we're finished with you, Pebbles, is what can people locally do to help in a meaningful way that doesn't end up in the pockets of some nonprofit bureaucrat or whatever.
Or Pat Robertson,
or Senator Farr, Representative Farr's re-election campaign, or whatever.
The Mendocino veterans have a soup kitchen there in New Orleans, right outside of the area where people are in camp.
Well, is it Veterans for Peace?
Yes, it's because in particular the Mendocino Veterans for Peace.
Because maybe there's a connection with the Santa Cruz. Maybe the Santa Cruz Vets for Peace is a way to go, Bruce. It's a possibility. Anyway, do you have any updates on medical marijuana while we have you, briefly, that we can roll with and then just move on?
Nothing really. We're just engaged in pulling together the suit against the city of Ukiah, and that'll take another week or two. The law went into effect on September 2nd.
This is a law criminalizing people from growing their own marijuana for medical purposes, except
basically scaring the shit out of people so that they won't grow, and having such draconian requirements.
Zoning restrictions, as we have in Santa Cruz, for instance, though not for growing.
Well, this is for patients who have all the rights. The dispensaries really have only indirect rights. So it's when you're attacking the patients, you're attacking the initiative itself.
Right, and this is in violation of Proposition 215,
that's our
as well as AB 420, the state legislation, belatedly enforcing or regulating or supposedly giving that wonderful state assistance to Proposition 215.
They finally gave enough to at least open it up a year later.
Right.
They didn't. It was opened up in January of 2003, or was supposed to be, and then it took them until January 2004 to donate $1 million from
Pebbles,
the people.
I want to thank you and roll because
go for it.
I appreciate your calling in. Call again.
We'll do.
And I think we'll have more time next time. At least I hope we will.
Keep it up.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Phone line's open. We got 7 minutes of Bratton in the studio. If you want to grab him, and just tell him, shake him, wake him. Who knows?
Wake him to what?
To the important...
To your issues?
Yes, sir.
How about waking you to my issues?
Hey,
I've been fighting here, in the media since 75. I haven't seen you write much and broadcast much on 30 or 40 issues that I care a lot about. So we're just swapping issues, that's all.
One of you has said much of anything about, educational issues.
We have a caller who's going to do the talking for the both of us.
To hell with education.
Hey, caller. We got anything to say about anything? You want to educate us?
Sure. Well, actually, I wanted to ask Bruce a question.
Go ahead.
First,
Do you know what time the NAACP picnic is tomorrow? I saw
it today. Isn't it? Oh, is it today?
It's tomorrow. Do you know?
Oh, noon to 5.
Noon to 5, and yeah. That's at De La Viega Park.
De La Viega. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, and buy barbecue tickets. Great barbecue. I was there last year. I can't make it tomorrow because I got to do my column.
This is the same NAACP that wouldn't allow people to distribute flyers about local civil rights.
And they've
violations.
Never taken place. They've never taken a position on the homeless either. Homeless bans.
No, they have. They took a position on the First Amendment. Which is, we don't want you distributing our flyers about civil rights at our event. That was their position. Thank you.
Wow.
Wow. There you go.
Well, anyway, I was hoping if anyone found out if they were going, I was wondering if they'd be doing anything involving donations or anything for the recent disaster going on.
You might give them a call, although I don't know how easy they are to reach by phone.
Okay, that sounds good. And then the other thing I was going to just put out a general call if anyone has space, an empty garage or anything like that. People need to start collecting donations, and I'd be willing to volunteer. There's kind of a makeshift communication page set up on Santa Cruz Indie Media right now.
Okay.
That says, I think it's in the right-hand column, something like willing to send clothing down. So look for updates.
Looking at local collection of goods to help Katrina victims.
What was that?
I'm looking at the Indie Media website. Local collection of goods to help Katrina victims? It says.
Yeah.
That's probably
so.
The one.
As soon as I think the problem that we're looking at right now is trying to find a place to bring the goods to, and then from there, we could send them off. So, if you know of anyone, this is a call out for anyone who might have some extra space to do that. That'd be great, and we could get it sent out. Hopefully to a group like Food Not Bombs.
So is there a phone number people can call, or should they just put it on Indie Media? What should they do if they have a place they want to offer?
How about they put it on Indie Media, or they can call in right now to your show. Robert, you're going to be on for another hour?
Another 40 minutes.
Another 40 minutes? Okay. And then another thing I was going to say, I just found out that, Robert, you might be homeless soon as well. Is that true?
I'll be homeless, but I'll have my sticker car to live in, and you know, Bruce will support my right to sleep in it, maybe, if he makes up his mind on this.
Well, issue. I'm going to bring it as an issue right now, too. You know, we talk about you've stuck up for the homeless. I don't always agree with you. And
you calling me stuck up?
No, I would like to say this, though, because you're not bringing it forward as an issue also, and that is, you know, you've been there for homeless people. I think that, you know, if people have low-cost housing they can offer you, I hope they do it, and I want to just say that so people know that, you know, we need to support the community activists also. We've butted heads recently, but,
sure.
You know, I appreciate what you do, that you stand up for homeless people, and I hope that if anyone has housing, they can offer it to you as well.
And you've also been very active in a number of issues, and obviously you're active in this issue. But of course, my low-income housing will be, I'll be passing the bar, or the bars, in order to get to the low-income housing I'll be going to. Well, who knows? Maybe I won't. Let's hope
just
not.
Don't pass go.
I will hopefully not go at all. Anyway, great. So,
is there a way that people can get a hold of you, Robert, if they have...
Yeah, sure. 423-HUFF is the number. Just leave a message on that long HUFF message line. And it's not that out of date, Bruce. Only 3 weeks out of date.
August 15th,
well,
was it?
Well, yeah. Right. You should have seen it before. It was April. Yeah. Listen, caller, I appreciate the help, and keep up the good work on Indie Media, in spite of the ban on Becky Johnson. I do appreciate your help on that stuff.
Yeah, you bet.
Hey.
Okay, and so hopefully people can call in if they have any ideas about storage areas and stuff like that. There's also, I was going to also mention, it looks like Food Not Bombs wants people to call possible corporate donors. So you can find out their 800 number, get connected with Food Not Bombs, and just start calling. If
That's
you don't
true.
Have a lot of resources, you can call. There's a lot of things we can do, so let's just keep busy and, you know, keep looking for ways to help.
That's a great idea, and keep calling into free radio with that. You probably should put this out as a PSA, is my suggestion. You put it on the voicemail, 427-4523, and it could be repeated so you don't have to keep giving out the same info, because it sounds like
a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
But you're not homeless. Are you?
Not at the moment.
But, no. Have you ever been homeless?
Yeah, I've been homeless. But I'm not in the position right now where I'm homeless. And I will be just losing my housing and looking for a place.
If you go to jail, you mean?
Not if I go to jail. If I'm losing my, at the end of this month, I'll have no place.
And do you have enough money to go to the next place to find another one?
Are you
destitute?
I mean, I'm not destitute.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to mean because
you could put me up, Bruce. The two of us could be quite a team.
I couldn't put up with you more than about an hour and a half. I've been here longer than I thought.
You've been here for quite a period of time.
No, it's fun. I like it. But I just want to make sure that people know you're not homeless.
I'm not destitute. Certainly
no,
not. But I will be homeless.
Use the word. You're not homeless.
I will be houseless in about 3 weeks.
You can't say homeless.
Homely, but not homeless.
I knew it. You're avoiding that word.
I would never avoid that word. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio with the Is He Houseless? Is He Homeless? What's going on here? Robert, Bruce, and Thomas.
Hey. Well, hi. I was listening to a lady talk about Katrina, and, you know, I have a lot of compassion and pain for what's happened over there.
You know, we like to call it Hurricane George, not Hurricane Katrina. George Bush is really, he deserves full credit.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Unfortunately, there's been a disaster here. I don't hear too many people saying, let's make some space for food for the people on the streets of Santa Cruz. How about, you know, let's get some shelter together for the people on the streets. How many people are homeless on this street? How many people are struggling? And I see the same kind of faces of suffering and struggling on this streets of Santa Cruz. I'd like to hear more people talking about wanting to get together and helping those people. And I think it's really important that we help the people, Katrina. But I'd like to hear more people say, I want to volunteer to help people on these streets that they're right in front of you, and they're not even caring. You know, they're not doing anything. And there's people who say, oh, well, the shelters over there are feeding them. And, you know, I'd go down and get involved and send some donations, I think, because I really think that it's just a continuous disaster that's been happening for years, and nobody's doing anything.
It's actually an officially declared city emergency. They have three ongoing city emergencies declared in 1990, 1995, and 1998.
I call it a crisis.
But they've actually a major crisis.
I see it in their faces. I go down and feed those people. I see their faces. I see their suffering. I see that every day. But I don't hear people saying that. Don't they see it? Are they walking down the street? Or are they turning their heads and just saying, oh, well, you know, they're taken care of by, you know, or I can't do anything. Well, people say they can't do anything about Katrina. Now they're saying they can. Suddenly they can help these people. You know, I'd like to see it. And I'm not trying to put down helping them. I want to make sure that's clear. I just like to see more people say, I want to help the people in front of their faces.
Here you call it. Do you have a question for Bruce here? Or?
Nope. I just wanted to say that I really hope that more people get involved.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, just a comment.
Sure.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
I want to make the point, though, that...
I want to leave. Thank you very much.
Hey, Bruce.
It's been a real pleasure to be with both of you.
And keep thinking about that sleeping ban issue. And as soon as you figure out something, let me know.
Right. And I'll let you sleep in your car, especially while you're driving.
You are so sweet. The guy is... He isn't really the most irritating man, see? See, I win. All right. Thanks, Bruce. And that's Bruce Bratton. In case you want to read more of his stuff, you can go to brattononline.com.
You can subscribe to it, too.
.com. Brattononline.com.
And also, you can get hard copy for those of you who don't do internet, and a lot of you radio listeners are very suspect in that area. You can get hard copy in front of logos at the coffee cart. Curbside coffee cart, or better known as Wormies.
Wormies. I never knew it was Wormies.
That's her name.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce, for coming in and staying quite a long time. And we will, of course, diss you after you've left. And you can listen to that later.
I know you shop at Trader Joe's, one of the world's top five retail grocery chains. Makes Safeway look like a little dot on the map. Trader Joe's.
Well, I'm out here on the air. This is shocking. I don't know what to say. All right. Well. All our secrets are coming out here.
Supporting like New Leaf and other
staff of life.
Actually, I do support staff New Leaf, though I also criticize New Leaf for how they treat homeless people. And if I hear Trader Joe's,
German organization, right?
Wait, now you got something against Germans? You're going to get it.
No, but I have something against the people who go there thinking like, well, this is so cool. Everybody's in Hawaiian shirts and all that stuff. I mean, and not realizing that they they do make Safeway look like just small peanuts in terms of the size of their operation all over the world.
Trader, you know, actually,
not as Trader Joe's, of course. That's just the cute California
title,
brand,
the little
image,
label.
Image,
yeah.
Image,
you know, I'd like to hear more about this. Perhaps you can give us an update at some point.
Perhaps you can read the column. I've had it in there like several years. Those are my issues.
I read the column. Perhaps
those are my
you have
issues.
A caller. You might even want to. That's the caller. Maybe you can have a question for this man before he gets out the door. Hi, you're on the air with the departing Bruce Bratton.
Yeah, hi. I was just talking, hearing you guys talk about.
Got a question for Bruce before he goes?
What'd you say?
Got a question for Bruce before he goes? He's about to leave.
No, I don't have a question.
Okay,
for Bruce.
Get out of here, Bruce. Good to hear you. Thanks for coming in. All right. So, I'm sorry, caller. Please go ahead.
Oh no, I was just saying that, like, you know, Trader Joe's one of the top five huge companies in America, and it's true. It is. People love to shop there, and you know, think it's cool and it's homey. And same thing with Whole Foods, you know, and Whole Foods is trying to come into Santa Cruz, and, you know, about 10 years ago. And, you know, Whole Foods came into Monterey instead, and they shut down every single local health food store that's possible there.
Did we block Whole Foods?
I think people need to realize a little more of, like, you know, where they're actually putting their money.
So
we didn't block Trader Joe's.
So has Trader Joe's had a negative impact, you think, on other stores? What's the story? I did do an interview with Shopper's Corner about a year ago. They weren't concerned about it, but I'm not quite sure what the follow-up is. Do you have any sense on that, caller?
Yeah, well, I mean, Trader Joe's isn't necessarily, like, hurting local businesses that much because they do more, like, packaged foods, you know, and you can't really go to Trader Joe's and get a whole bunch of really good, heady produce. But still, like, you know, you're looking at things like Whole Foods, and it's devastating is what they're doing.
And
like, you know, when they came into Monterey, they said, like, okay, well, after, you know, we're shutting down businesses, let's take all the managers and employ them of all the little local health food stores. But they did that, and they employed them, and then 3 months later, they were all fired. So it's like,
wow.
You know, I don't know. Whole Foods is mighty corporate. And
right, but of course, it's not really the subject of this discussion here, but yeah, okay. Any other thoughts on anything else you've heard this morning?
No, not really.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye. Phone line is open, 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio, still faithfully standing or sitting by the mic, is Thomas Levitt. I'm here, of course. I'm Robert Norris. We have about 40 minutes left in the show, and just for a goof, although it's not as goofy as it should be, here's a little from the Capitol Steps on an album called Four More Years in the Bush League. But before that, this caller. Let's see what the caller has to say. Hello, you're on the radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hey there, John. Calling back.
I'd like to finish reading what I was reading before.
You have your Human Rights Organization's response to Rotkin's letter, which I will remind listeners.
Rotten Rotkin
is how you describe him, Thomas. My goodness, that kind of language is never going to endear you to our.
I didn't call him Rotten Rotkin.
No, you didn't. But our Thomas Levitt just did.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is just to remind listeners, the 4 points of Rotkin were: one, that he was not going to move to keep the sleeping ban fine what it was in 1999. It's doubled since then, but he doesn't want to take any action on that. Secondly, claiming that there's not that many arrests or citations. Secondly, he is going to move in spite of the political perils of doing so, largely what I regard as meaningless gesture of extending the right to sleep in a vehicle in a driveway from 3 nights to 10 nights per month, since he's had no complaints about that. The third thing is, what was the third thing?
Third thing was oral communications at a time.
Oh, right. Oral communications. He said, it probably won't happen. Everything's going to be okay, but made no commitments and no promises. And in the last year, I think oral communications has been moved from its normal place in at least, I don't know, a fourth or a third of the city council meetings, particularly when homeless demonstrations have been planned. That was under Kennedy more than under Rotkin.
Oh, I see.
And the rules have been changed, of course, to put me in a position where I and others who want to talk on issues on the consent agenda can't remove them and talk on them unless we talk on them very, very rapidly or very, very little. And if we try harder to do that, we get arrested. And that's what's happened to me, and I'm going to trial on that. So,
and then finally he was talking about the fact he doesn't want to disclose his private schedule.
He doesn't want to disclose his public schedule, because indeed, as mayor, where he's appearing as mayor, he does so in a public capacity. He can't appear as mayor in a private capacity, I don't think.
Well, his personal schedule, whatever.
In other words, his schedule, unlike other executives throughout the state of California who have revealed their appointment calendars, as well as who's lobbied them, Rotkin refuses to reveal either. He continues to do that.
Right.
And I don't know what he was saying about the lobbyists to you, but he did say he wouldn't reveal his public schedule because it would give you a chance to go and protest him, and he didn't like that idea. Mr. First Amendment Rotkin, I know him. Anyway,
yeah, sure.
So you wrote a letter. What was your letter?
Okay, it says, "Dear Mayor Mike Rotkin, thanks for your commitment to bring the proposal to City Council that we lobbied you for earlier this year on extending the number of days allowed for persons with permission from the resident to sleep while in a vehicle in the driveway of a private residence from the current 3 days to 10 days. We commend you for your brave stand on this issue and plan to rally support for your proposal despite the unkind, hostile, and self-indulgent tone of your letter. Your aggressive and mocking attitude is very disturbing. Yes, we have criticized your past actions when it comes to your support of anti-homeless laws. We may represent an opposing viewpoint, but in no way are we addicted to the mindless disruption of the council, as you suggest. However, we are fed up with homeless rights being put on the council's back burner. Many of the Santa Cruz anti-homeless laws are unprovoked restrictions to placate business interests. In our effort to engage the community, we will table and leaflet with written information, hold meetings and forums open to all. We encourage letter writing, phone calls to the city council, and demonstrations against such selective and abusive power. All of these actions are legal and within the laws of our country! Yes, we will be heard on the streets, in the halls of government, in the nation's courts, and anywhere else that fight for human rights and preservation of the Bill of Rights takes us. We hold the viewpoint that every person homeless or housed be free of persecution in accordance with the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was made to protect everyone and must be obeyed by everyone to be effective. It represents the basic understanding of human rights. If we cannot agree on this, then we cannot move forward. As for your lament about the part-time status of the Santa Cruz mayorship, one should ask oneself, quote, what am I getting out of this, unquote. We and many others have asked the same question. What is the purpose and intent of your involvement in local government? Thanks for your invitation for further discussion. We will be in contact with you soon, Human Rights Organization."
Hey,
so that's our letter.
Hmm. Well.
And my personal side note is that I think that this opening up of the three-day rule to make it a 10-day rule for people to sleep in a car in a person's driveway actually may be a significant move. It takes it out of the realm of being somewhat impractical for someone to actually use that for temporary housing. It makes it actually a practical solution for some people, because they could, say, have three friends in Santa Cruz and they could occupy someone's driveway on a rotating basis and put themselves up for a couple of months in a row that way.
I don't think it's
illegal.
I mean, I suppose. The problem is that it's probably being done now already, and it's not really been an issue because people have been discreet about it.
Yeah.
And
it wouldn't generate a magnet effect because you'd have to know somebody in Santa Cruz already in order to do this. So people who don't know anyone wouldn't be able to come into town and just park on someone's driveway.
Well, I think also that potentially...
Are you there?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
And Thomas has a comment.
Well, I think it's nice. It will make people visiting someone in Santa Cruz, middle-class folks who've objected to the impracticality of having their parents or other friends visit them in an RV and not be able to park in front of their house. It'll make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, it has the potential to help a homeless person, but I would suspect that in conjunction with this, there'll be a lot of noise about, the fact that this doesn't license you to violate any of the many other laws about inappropriate use of land, etc., and that if someone is living out of someone's out of a car in someone's driveway, that it won't restrict the people from calling the police and complaining about the public safety or health hazard or whatever else of this. So I think we need to watch, if this does pass, we need to watch to ensure that it's not one of these giving with the right hand and taking away with the left type of deals.
It isn't really giving anything as far as I can see. I mean, I don't have any sense that this has really done much, and that it's not...
No, it hasn't done much with a three-day rule.
Well, no, I mean, if it were done, it would be done probably independently of the three-day rule, because I don't think people generally concern themselves with the law. Can I sleep in your driveway in a vehicle? Sure. Or no. It's not really the issue. The law itself is very onerous. You have to get the written permission of the owner and the tenant, and that, I'm sure, will continue. And I'm sure Rotkin's going to throw in something about not there being no monetary remuneration allowed, so that it can't be used as, temporary housing for a financial exchange or a work exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm largely ignorant of the extent to which it's used right now. And I don't think it's really, it wouldn't have even been brought up at all, except that it was one of the points that the human rights organization suggested to Rotkin, which now he can use, to wave his flag around, which, it's an opportunity for us to raise issues at City Council, which Rotkin acknowledges, and he regrets it.
Yeah.
And it'll also be an opportunity for all the neighborhood bigots to come out and start ranting and raving, and there are plenty more of them than there were 4 years ago, or at least they're more powerfully organized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to happen, too. Anything that allows for a dialogue is good. Of course, what we really need is some kind of tent city at City Hall, real tent city with real people. And who knows, maybe, though I'm not destitute, I will be outdoors and I will be without lodging in October. So
I'm selling my trailer, unfortunately. Can't afford the cost of living here anymore.
Yeah, you're going over the hill to the...
Probably be hanging out in Morgan Hill or San Jose.
Yeah, you're out of here. So you're, and I know that Bernard Klitzner of the Human Rights Organization has left town for 4 months to overseas.
Mm-hmm.
What, are you still meeting with the HRO? Are you meeting on Saturdays?
Yes, we are. We're still meeting at 115 Coral Street in the cafeteria there on Saturday at 1:45.
Huh, so people can still check you out. Is there a number?
Even if I have to drive over the hill, I'll still be coming there.
Wow.
So I'll be there.
Devoted fellow.
I wanted to talk about that whole issue of, what Robert's putting up with, and John's obvious inability to, continue afford to live here. Just the fact that, even if you do have resources, even if you are capable of paying rent, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to be able to find housing in a timely fashion.
Because that was your situation, right, Thomas? You had some money and you couldn't find housing.
I had money and I couldn't find anything on an interim basis or a permanent basis for an extended period that was even close to reasonable. Sure, I could have dropped $3,000 a month on a house immediately, but I'm not going to sign a lease for that.
Before we do anything further, John, is there anything more you want to say on this subject? Or
should not really.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Go ahead, Thomas.
So, when I did find housing, I was forced to make a compromise. I wound up living in the boondocks for a short period in a one-bedroom cottage, with my wife and two kids. And, ultimately the housing I found, which was affordable, and I really appreciated the opportunity to get it, because of my credit record, and my credit record wasn't perfect, it wasn't terrible, and the fact that I have cats, pets, those blocked me from, maybe 95% of the housing opportunities in the city right off the bat in terms of any corporate managed housing, which is a huge issue, was just not an option. And if you're a homeless person, obviously you're not going to have a great amount of credit. You're not going to be considered by you know, 90% out of the housing there right off the bat, it's not even worth applying for because you're just not going to qualify for it, even if you do have a job, even if you do have money, even if you can pay for it. And if you have a dog or a pet, like many homeless people do, that's blocking you off even more worse. So, I mean, there's huge issues there.
Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hello. This is Road Scholar.
Hey, Road Scholar. What's up?
Well, I wish to discuss a specific issue relative to civilization, and the issue is pertinent to what you're discussing this morning.
You better get to it, or we're going to give you trouble. I mean, welcome to Free Radio.
Well, thank you, Robert, and your guest. I was struck by the fact, considering the devastation in the Gulf states, that glaringly shows to me the level of economic slavery and dependency that much of the populace is in, especially since it was brought up that people were so dependent, it was almost as if they were still under segregation laws, that they were unable to essentially remove themselves from the area of impact insofar as the carnage, the wreckage. Something about they couldn't afford to leave or even drive out seems odd, but ultimately it just struck me as how dependent much of the population was upon that series of economies. And
you know, that's a really good point, caller. I don't know what the actual details, whether there was people were prevented from leaving because the area was so flooded they were stuck on top of their houses.
No, this was before. They couldn't even afford to evacuate, to leave. Literally, they did not have the economic means to get on a bus, buy a plane ticket, or drive out of town, or arrange to drive out of town, or rent a car or anything, because, like, you know, they're...
How about to walk out of town?
Again, you've got an 85-year-old grandmother in a wheelchair. Are you going to walk 20, 40, 80 miles to the nearest town that wasn't likely to be flooded?
In 100-degree heat.
Yeah. So, I mean, literally, those, you know, tens of thousands, perhaps up to 100,000 people who simply did not have the economic means, the economic luxury, the spare dollars to even get themselves out of town. And the government didn't have the...
Didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They were too busy operating in Iraq and...
Cutting cake!
Let them eat cake, yes. What do you think, caller? You're a man I know who uses his bicycle a lot. Why don't they just pick up their bicycle and head out of town?
If you had the level of physical robustness, and essentially not the ties, insofar as caring for infirm, sickly, certainly a person in my mind would not have hesitated and definitely been able to head for the hills and get out.
If you had a
even if it's on
family.
Bicycle, no problem. Mm-hmm. And accounting for those who were just too ill, too infirm, and sickly to be able to do it, that's one thing. But literally, much of the people that stayed, it seemed to me, were literally in a state of psychological dependency where they didn't even have the independence of mind to even think of a way other than the norms of society, you know, drive, pay your way out. That's what I'm merely trying to bring up. And that would probably be found throughout the land, to be honest with you, in similar circumstances. So insofar as our civilization is designed and structured as it is, you know, privileges, enfranchisement, allocated as it is, you'd find that similar situation no matter what. So that's all. I wanted to bring up that it seemed to me just as potent as so-called slavery was, was, and perhaps still is, but only under another name and
so
under another guise.
People are they're economically dependent or they're...
And psychologically conditioned. And, of course, now that we have tremendous amounts of houseless people, I noticed that the press seems to be focusing on, at least informing us about, all these cities and other places of habitation opening up, providing places for people to stay.
Being afraid
shelter.
Of all these homeless people.
We could do that in Santa Cruz, too, you know. I anticipate an influx of very talented jazz musicians, by the way, here in Santa Cruz County, since Bourbon Street's been washed out, and we do have the Jazz Society here.
We don't want those homeless bums coming to Santa Cruz.
I just had the greatest idea. We should go to the city council and ask them to invite 1,000 people.
Indeed.
To come and live in Santa Cruz.
Right?
Let's do the magnet effect.
There is one other point that's amazing. I've never heard the term used, and I do follow media very well, and I have did it for many years, insofar as, you know, information, news, distribution sources, to use the term on people in the United States as refugees, homegrown refugees. That's new. That's was carefully thought of to be used as a word to be disseminated via, you know, large networks. Typically, it'll be homeless, displaced, houses, but I've never heard the term used refugee here. Sure, refugees in the Sudan and Somalia, Mogadishu.
They're black people. That's why they're refugees.
So I was struck by that also.
Well, thank you, caller. Any further thoughts on this? And
well, thank you very much. I appreciate being able to...
I mean, people can call the city council at 420-5020 and ask them to have an emergency session to pass simple resolution inviting 1,000 people to come to Santa Cruz. And, of course, along the way, maybe opening up a campground for the 1,500 to 2,000 who are already here.
Yes, correct. The so-called deserving houseless, yes, homeless versus the homegrown variety who are undeserving.
Yeah, and that's going
to use the term. See, that's not a new situation. That develops occasionally from time to time in terms of crisis or so-called natural disasters. I've noticed this over the years, where proviso is made then to accommodate people in need of shelter. But the folks that are basically, as a matter of course, for whatever the reasons are routine without shelter, they're not provided special accommodations.
Right, and we're going to see these distinctions become very, very evident as they start doing relief efforts for people.
They're already talking about it with that underclass article in the Sentinel.
Right, in today's Sentinel, there's a little slimy story.
Anyway, well, aloha and a hui ho.
And the same to you, sir.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Phone lines open, 427-3772. Thomas?
Let's house one local houseless person for every refugee that we house.
Right. Well, I'm sure that means that, of course, neither will be housed, except possibly 10 days in a driveway if they don't exchange any money sometime in December, maybe, if we're lucky.
I'd like to go back to what I was talking about, like the fact that there are a huge number of obstacles in the way because of the way our housing market is structured, because of its dominance by corporate property management companies, et cetera, that basically, like, you know, not to mention the cost, but even with setting aside the cost, it basically make it very difficult, almost impossible for a homeless person, even if they have the means, even if they're employed, you know, and they can show a pay stub to obtaining housing. And so, and even like people like you and me, who are not totally destitute and have some resources but aren't capable of dropping $3,000 a month for a three-bedroom house, or $2,500 a month for a two-bedroom house, or $450,000 for a one-bedroom, one-bath condominium, you know, have issues with, like, finding housing that's within our
Your
means.
Solution, Thomas, as a former city council candidate and someone who might be putting an initiative on the ballot perhaps next week?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I'm not exactly sure how to solve that aspect of it. I mean, I think that there's
speculation tax, perhaps, use of immediate, shall we say, opening up of public buildings that are currently unused, some sort of eminent domain confiscation of property for homeless use or that sort of thing?
Well, I think that, this is a separate issue from, like, finding an immediate solution for providing a safe and legal place for everyone to sleep.
Or just, for God's sake, a simple campground.
Yes.
Thank
so,
you
I mean,
very much.
I talked about this when I ran for city council. I think, you know, the city needs to facilitate the creation of a ladder of housing. You know, there needs to be a legal campground for somebody who's completely destitute, you know, to be able to at least pitch a tent or roll a sleeping bag out in a location where they're, like, safe from, you know, victimization and attacks, and, you know, have some physical security where they can leave their property. You know, I think we should have a campground where somebody
and
can
let's
leave
include
property during the day, so
right,
they can go fine housing.
Like they had at, you know, at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter in a miserable kind of way out in 1995.
Not, it shouldn't be miserable.
It's, right, it shouldn't be miserable.
It should be clean, it should be sanitary, it should be maintainable, it should be secure.
And it should be accessible also to young people traveling around the country. I mean,
oh, yeah.
They used to have things called hostels. Why can't they have things called campgrounds that are realistically also places that acknowledge the housing emergency that we have in Santa Cruz, declared by the city council, as I said three times.
So that's the first step, is getting people out of the bushes, out of people's front doorways. I mean, this is what we want, right? I mean, this is what the people who like are concerned about the sleeping ban issue, concerned about this is the justification for the sleeping ban. The issue, in my view, is not the sleeping ban. The issue is that there's no safe and legal place for people to sleep. If we had a safe and legal place that could accommodate all of these people, the sleeping ban would be much less of an issue, because there wouldn't be, or there would be a very much smaller number of people would be impacted by it. So that's the first level, is just getting people.
Now, wait a minute. Rotkin assures us that very few people are impacted. It's only a ticket a day, or maybe even less, happening. And it only happens on complaints.
As you're aware that, like, one, the police do a lot of informal enforcement. That's what the move along, you know, that Mike Rotkin referred to in his letter is all about, you know. And two, the police cite lots of people that never actually make it to court or have charges filed against them, but they, you know, have to go into court and out of court several times, etc. But to go back to to what I was talking about, this ladder.
There actually are a lot of tickets that are coming online. I mean, I continue to get complaints on the street, and I don't. When I ask him, did the police officer tell you there was a complaint? And he said, no.
Of course.
He just said it's illegal to camp here. You know,
and we know that. Or illegal.
Maybe
to
there
sleep.
Was. The police officer didn't say so. And Rotkin has not documented this fact. He just simply takes the word of the police department.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's a distinction between sleeping and camping, too.
Right.
In terms of the tickets and the laws,
and we're talking mostly about sleeping tickets here.
Yeah, yeah. So I just wanted to make that point. But so I mean, you know, that's the first and most basic level, and that shouldn't cost a lot. I mean, we're talking about like a large flat chunk of land with decent drainage, you know, and porta potties, hopefully permanent facilities ultimately. But, I mean, you could do that overnight and house, like, you know, several hundred people.
It was recommended by the Homeless Issues Task Force as an emergency measure halfway through its tenancy back in 1999 in the fall. It wasn't done. The question is, how do we get it done here? I mean, we can babble about it from now to doomsday on the air, but what concrete steps do we recommend that listeners take?
Well, I would say that, you know, right now what you should be doing is you should be finding out who's thinking about running for city council, because ultimately the city council has to make this decision, or it's going to be a court case.
This is the electoral strategy. Of course, there's also an initiative you could try.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's an initiative too. Either way, somehow or other, the laws need to be changed. So that's either an initiative or it's a city council action.
Or
you know,
direct action sometimes prompts changes when the situation is stalemated. I'm, of course, a big talker about direct action, and I've joined in a few as well.
But that requires the city council to believe that the cost, political cost of enduring the direct action are greater than the political cost that will accompany them taking any action. I mean, the direct action did have a really big effect when David Silva was putting all that pressure on the city council with, you know, his
hunger fast and sleep fast back in 2000,
and
2001.
Was calling and all that stuff. You know, the city council did act. Of course, they acted by creating, you know, by diverting all the energy through the Homeless Issues Task Force. And they did do that preliminary, say, sleeping zone, but then they, you know, backed off on it. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's a combination of direct action, legal pressure, but I think it's also a matter of like pinning down potential city council members early on what they're willing to do, and trying to make and creating the political space for someone to take a proactive position about this. Believe it or not, in Santa Monica, the conservative candidate was in favor, was opposing the police department, and was in favor of creating a safe sleeping zone. Now, I don't know what the whole political thing there was, but that was someone that's the equivalent of like Mike Premack.
Mark Premack.
Or more, taking that position. So it is not impossible.
Well, I know that Santa Monica has had one of the more liberal sleeping bans, which was concocted by 80s city attorney Robert Myers. That's Bob Myers.
Yes. Who resigned at one point because he couldn't deal with the city council's.
I think he was kicked. He was kicked out. Actually, I think. I mean, he actually stood his ground because they needed a supermajority to get rid of him, and he insisted on staying. And he wouldn't write the letter for. He wouldn't write a bill to criminalize feeding people in the parks. But let me. We only have about 10 minutes left in the show, so. Are you pretty much summed up with your housing appeal, your housing analysis? I know you were talking about that.
Well, I was just saying, you know, there's a huge gap between being homeless and getting into housing. You know, it's financial, it's legal, it's procedural, et cetera. And the city council, if they truly cared about this, could be making decisions that would provide people with the ability to bootstrap themselves off the streets. Because a lot of what happens to homeless people is a side effect directly of simply being on the street, not having any personal physical security, not having any personal security for your possessions.
Right.
And a lot of their problems, mental and other things, would be dramatically decreased if there was just some basic level of physical security.
You mean housing, not psychiatric drugs, is the answer here, Thomas? I'm afraid you're going against the mainstream. I think.
No,
well,
I think the
I'm
mainstream
sorry.
Is
we can't allow
to
that.
Grasp
no.
That
no.
You know.
No. It's been shown. You know that homelessness is a mental illness. That's been pretty clearly proved. Let's move on to the next topic.
Yeah.
Just kidding, of course. Here's an interesting. In the past, I've read a couple of articles. Remember, we're still deeply involved in murdering people in Iraq, setting up military bases there, looting the economy, and colluding with a bogus constitutional situation, which is already unconstitutional.
Sounds like New Orleans.
Does indeed. Unfortunately, New Orleans doesn't have the support it does because the troops are over in Iraq, running around shooting people, looting, and so forth. They're not looting directly, of course. It's all very well organized. And
they're shooting people in New Orleans.
Yeah, but the looting is more indirect. And actually, there's nothing to loot in New Orleans. This is a lot of.
Right.
Anyway, the war in Iraq has been an issue and is an issue, and obviously impacts homelessness and civil rights locally. And I've been trying to get people, encourage people to protest the war as much as possible. I know Cindy Sheehan with Camp Casey, the protest outside of Bush's Prairie Chaparral summer home in Texas has been quite, it's been getting a lot of media and getting a lot of people, you know, a lot of activists activated, although Washington Post, I believe, poll claims that 76% of the people haven't changed their opinion, and the 10% activists got more activated, and another 10% more activated against the issue. So it's, you know, of course, who wants to trust the Washington Post? But in the midst of this discussion, Tom Hayden, former radical, recently a politician, not too recently, but he's a politician, Democratic Party politician, came up with a program which I actually printed up and passed out at the Wednesday night SAFE event, which is sometimes has a HUF component. SAFE is Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And then the musical event happens every Wednesday night in front of New Leaf Market, where people reclaim public space in spite of people like Pam Bechtel, RCSO downtown, who I recently observed giving more tickets to people riding bicycles the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, actually just waiting, lying in wait for them. Actually, that's on some of the tape I'll be playing for you probably next time when I come back between 6 and 8 in the evening on Thursday. But the anti-war movement, there's a debate. And is it out now, or is it out maybe later, get an exit plan, let's chat about this for a while, oh, we want to protect the folks. I mean, what's – and I – first, the Hayden plan is somewhat he says, well, you know, we at least should get some troops out in a matter of months, somewhere down the road, and have an exit strategy and get the UN involved. It sounds a bit like what Dean and then Kerry were talking about. It's kind of, you know, mush and schmush, although less mushy because things have gotten more hefty and more outspoken. And frankly, the insurgents are better organized, killing more people more rapidly. And, you know, the insurrection is mounted. The constitutional crisis over there is clear and massive. We're helping to set up an Islamic theocratic state is what's coming down.
It's
here.
It's anti-woman.
That, of course, involves putting women in their proper place, behind closed doors and in the harem or whatever, the harem of the moment. Just kidding about that being the proper place. Now, here's a statement from, here's an analysis from Alexander Coburn on the Counterpunch website, because Hayden's position is, to me, I realized, though it looked kind of initially optimistic, it was a four-point plan. I thought, aha, a plan. You get all excited, a plan. Then I read a critique on Hayden and the plan, and I read that aloud by Stan Goff, talking about how absurd any proposal other than out now is, because out now is the issue. People who don't want to talk about out now don't really, they're the Nixonian Vietnamization type people, same people who are talking about a slow withdrawal. I suppose there are different people like Kerry and Clinton want to send in more troops to provide security. Or Bush, who babbles about mission accomplished and praises the Iraqi situation. But in terms of any meaningful change, in terms of a real direction to go in immediately, in terms of ending the war crime that is the Iraqi occupation, out now. So here's his statement on that. He's analyzing it. I hope we see omens of large. This is Alexander Coburn in the Counterpunch website. I hope we see omens of larger resistance in the anti-war movement. We no doubt about it. The people are turning against the war. The Bush crowd is truly on low ground, and the political levies are starting to crumble. They feel it in Congress. Already there are private meetings, both sides of the aisle, evolving new positions on the war, exit strategies, and so forth. Waiting in the wings are impeachment inquiries, hearings on Bush's lowballing of the casualties, the lack of body armor. Once Bush's base starts to crumble on these matters will move center stage. Right now, there's a big argument going on about exit strategies and schedules from Iraq. Cindy Sheehan and many say, out now. Then the responsible political say, be realistic. Start to leave at the end of 06. Stan Goff took a few lusty swings at Tom Hayden on this site, on this very matter of scheduling. He got attacked as being nasty and abusive, as well as being divisive and unrealistic. I wrote Stan a note as follows. Jesus Christ, this is like being suffocated by a dead ostrich. There's nothing wrong with vigorous invective. The left doesn't get places often because it's way too polite, too reluctant to air differences, too polite about people like Tom Hayden when they're selling a politically correct Democrat line. Tom has done some good things and he's done some bad things. In 1982, I wrote in the Village Voice and in the National Gallery in Washington, D.C., there are 134 portraits of Benedict Arnold. None look alike. All resemble Tom Hayden. Why did I write that? Because Hayden and Fonda flew to the advanced Israeli positions from which the Israeli gunners were indiscriminately, New York Times reporter Tom Friedman's words, censored at the time, shelling Beirut to show solidarity with Israeli forces and to bolster Tom's political position in California. People who raised the issue of justice for Palestinians were told year after year that it was a divisive issue to raise, would rock the boat, set the cat among the pigeons, cause ructions, so the Democratic Party never has dealt with it. I haven't the slightest idea of what Hayden says now about Israel and the Palestinians, but like hundreds of other prominent in the DP through the 70s and 80s, he cost us all, most of all the Palestinians, very dear by his prudence. I looked at the people's looked at this website last week and saw a parcel of shredded platitudes about internationalizing the occupying force. This is about in Iraq, I assume. You were quite right to make fun of this blather. This internationalization line reminds me of the prudent line back in 2002 and 2003, before invasion, when a lot of people wrapped up in the anti-war message in talk about a UN force. Very polite and totally unrealistic, since the UN is a wholly owned subsidiary of the U.S. We aren't, thank God, a fascist country here like Germany was in World War II, but suppose the Germans have been able to speak freely. Would they have been talking in 1942 about a withdrawal of German forces from the Soviet Union beginning at the end of 1943? No. By mid-42, any sane German would have been saying, out now. Aus now, as they say in German. Now they would have been realist, and they would have been realistic because by the end of 43, most of the German soldiers were dead or captives. You want to tell all those U.S. soldiers sent to Iraq that they should ride around in their Humvees waiting to get blown up till the end of 2006 when withdrawal can commence on a schedule that preserves the Democratic Party's credibility? If so, they have a lot of explaining to do to mothers like Cindy Sheehan. And that's a letter he wrote to supporting the position that out now is the position to take. However, he got a letter from another friend of his, Bardacki, Frank Bardacki, who was one of the Oakland Seven arrested, who says, in essence, that there are many positions, that while the out-now position is the right position, it doesn't mean you should necessarily dismiss those who are willing to do less. You just don't want to pick it up as your core central position. I don't know why I'm going on about this, but it pressed me at the time, and I guess that's why I'm going on about it. We're just about at the end of a time here, and I put aside some articles on Katrina, Hurricane Katrina's aftermath in New Orleans. It all makes me so sick. It's kind of hard to look at, and it's being discussed on the front pages. It's gone from rescuing people to shooting looters,
it's gone from rescuing people not to shooting looters, but to what appears to be like a complete militarization of the situation, such that the people of New Orleans are being treated like the Palestinians or insurgents. That I heard two accounts yesterday of people who were clearly killed because the
so you were saying earlier, yeah.
People,
we have a caller,
because they were perceived as being a threat when they were doing nothing.
Right. Okay, you're on the air.
Hello, Robert. It's John again.
Go ahead, John.
I was just reading the Synology you picked up for us at the house here and noticing that there's an article there saying that people are turning in their SUVs and getting more fuel-efficient cars because the gas prices are so high.
Right.
So I thought that was a good little piece of good news there.
People are turning in their cars, you say?
Turning in their SUVs and getting more fuel-efficient cars like the hybrids and the uh-huh. Honda Civics. Stuff.
Those who can afford them. Yeah.
And if you can't afford to shell out $25,000 for a Prius, just go spend $1,200 on a Geo Metro, like a 1991 Geo Metro or something. Gets about 42 miles per gallon.
Or buy a good pair of hiking shoes, or else support right. the Metro drivers and get the strike stopped, I guess.
Ride a bike.
All right.
But anyway, this stuff is happening.
Thank you.
Yeah, what's happening in New Orleans? It makes me violently ill, and it's a bunch of white people talking about racism, etc. But the Kanye West was on a show, a Red Cross fundraiser yesterday, and he dared to say, George Bush doesn't care about black people, and of course the Red Cross immediately cut him off. And ultimately wound up censoring that out of the broadcast of the same event to the West Coast. But, maybe there will be a kind of silver lining in that, the kind of polite nature of discussion over race, at least in the mainstream media. Maybe people will finally get fed up and actually start speaking honestly about it.
It's been nice to see, it's so obvious with the levies not having been so underfunded, funding cut by 80% in 2003 by the Bush administration. Here's an article by Dave Lindorf. The real looters wear pinstripes, profiteering on disaster. In a crisis, there are always those who will obscenely take advantage of the situation for personal gain. I'm not talking here about the looters in New Orleans. As ugly and mean as some of their actions have been, I'm talking about the oil industry. The evidence is clear. 10% of American oil production is offline because of Hurricane Katrina. This has led to a nominal increase in the per-barrel world price of oil since 10% of the U.S. production represents only a single-digit portion of the world demand. Yet gasoline prices in the U.S. have soared from about $2.40 per gallon before the hurricane hit to over $3 per gallon now nationwide, a jump of 25%. Local gas station owners say that they have to raise their prices immediately because they only keep a few days' supply on hand and need to have the cash to pay for the next delivery, which will be priced at the new higher wholesale rate. I'm inclined to believe that if their new price is only around 20 to 25% higher than before. But clearly, somewhere between the oil coming out of the ground or into a port terminal and those retail pumps, some businesses are cleaning up at the expense of the public. Read that. The oil companies are gouging and profiteering on disaster. All you need to do is look at the stock pages. Halliburton, the oil services company, is up from 28.69 to 62 over the year. ExxonMobil is up from 45.09 to 64.37 over the year. Sunoco is up from 30.26 a year ago to 73.22. The list goes on and on. Back in World War II, there was an agency led by a man named Harry Truman, which aggressively prosecuted companies that tried to profiteer on the war. Now, profiteering on war and on national tragedy, it seems, is simply seen in Washington as good business to be rewarded by investors. Americans are now paying the price for handing all branches of the government over to one party. Even with the Democratic Party little more than an opposition in name only, if it had been in charge of even one of the two houses of Congress, you can bet that the dynamics of competitive politics would have led to hearings into price gouging and disaster profiteering. But with the Republicans in charge of both chambers, the odds of that happening are zero. Likewise, with free market zealots being appointed by President Bush in droves to the federal bench, don't expect any relief in the courts. The impact of the oil company's incredible greed will be profound. It's not just that they are picking our pockets at a time of national crisis. Their short-term profiteering is likely to send the national economy into a tailspin as higher oil prices stunt consumer spending and push up all energy costs. So far, the media coverage is focused on the actions of individual looters in the destroyed city of New Orleans. To the extent that gas prices have received attention, the focus has been on the retail end. Nobody's talking about the middlemen, and especially about the giant corporations that are really raking it in. When you have to think about it, though, you have to say that the cold, calculating effort by some corporate executives to take advantage of a national tragedy is far more vile and reprehensible than the actions of desperate or even criminally opportunistic individuals in a city that was essentially abandoned for days by federal authorities. The inaction of the Bush administration and of the Republican Congress to challenge or at least investigate this outrage is equally disgusting. An article by Dave Lindorf. In Democracy, Counterpunch website, the real looters wear pinstripes, profiteering on disaster. Any comments on that, Thomas?
Nationalize the oil companies.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. I don't want any communist propaganda on this statement. And let's see. Here's an article, Time for the U.S. to Start Over. Hurricane Katrina's blow to New Orleans and the failure of the government to respond have shown the United States to be a failed state. The George W. Bush administration's focus on all on its resources on war and the Department of Homeland Security, yet when a major American city was attacked, albeit by the forces of nature, the government failed to respond, leaving at least hundreds, probably thousands, to die, others to suffer an illness and an injury, and many more thirsty and hungry. No security in the homeland. A failed state. The Federal Emergency Management Administration, FEMA, apparently without any management, delayed response until the emergency had overwhelmed the city. No emergency management. A failed state. The National Guard and the military were called out to preserve order only when ordered had devolved, when the order had devolved into chaos. Chaos. A failed state. Hurricane Katrina blew the facade off American society. It pulled back the curtain to reveal the millions who live in poverty, mostly African American in New Orleans, but in other cities, Latino, Native American, and white. The most apparent failure of the state has been an emergency response, but far greater has been the failure to create a stable existence, a decent society for millions. What we see in New Orleans today, we might see as well if there had been a tsunami in Los Angeles or tornadoes in Chicago. Every American city harbors millions of people with high rates of unemployment, low incomes, poor housing, no health insurance, low levels of education. In the United States, 25% of our children are raised in poverty. Nearly 50 million people have no health insurance. When millions live like that, failed state. The Bush administration's priorities have been foreign war and globalization, the agenda of U.S. corporations. The war wrong, The beginning failed. It brought destruction to Baghdad and other cities of Iraq, killed 100,000 civilians, and so far nearly 2,000 U.S. troops, and has not brought about either the rule of law or democracy. What the war did do was divert resources from the United States that might have gone into building highways, houses, and schools, developing alternative energy sources, supporting free public education from K to PhD, as many nations have. We have had a government for the rich. We call that a failed state. President Bush has argued that our economy is a success, but it is not. We have had a failed economy. We have had now for the last few years, some would say for the last few decades, a jobless recovery. We have an economy that produces profit, accumulates profit, pays dividends, enriches shareholders, invests abroad, and grows in wealth. Yet it has failed to provide jobs and wages for its citizens. Wages and income for American families have stagnated, while costs for everything, but especially for higher education, have risen. We have an economy that cannot produce jobs that pay a living wage. We have wages that cannot pay for our standard of living. Now we will have $3.19 per gallon gas, then $5 a gallon gas. Then who knows all of this? All of this was predictable, was predicted. Now we have had the storm that has brought it all on faster, what was coming on anyway, what has now hit us. Jobless recovery. You cannot create an economy that allows people to live and thrive. You are in a failed state. The United States, the failed state, is so because it was first a rogue state. The United States failed to sign the Kyoto Treaty, the International Court of Justice Treaty, or the Landmines Treaty. The United States violated international law with its wars in Iraq and Iran and with its unsuccessful coup d'etat in Venezuela. What has happened over time has been the general distortion of ethics and values in foreign policy has also seeped into domestic policy. The United States has treated the United Nations with contempt, ridiculed France, and abused Venezuela. Interestingly, the UN and the European Union, Venezuela, and even Cuba have offered to help in any way they can, sending aid, loaning oil, providing doctors. Unfortunately, and this is characteristic of failed states, there is no political alternative. When the state has failed, it is because the existing political parties have failed, all of them. Throughout the last 25 years of war and peace, Democrats and Republicans, Carter and Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush have all pursued the same fundamental policies. Both parties have failed to deregulate the economy and to dismantle social welfare, have acted to deregulate the economy and to dismantle social welfare programs. The Democrats launched these policies with the deregulation of airlines and trucking. The Republicans deepened them with dramatic federal budget cuts for social services. Both parties carried out these policies abroad with the WTO and the IMF, with NAFTA and CAFTA. The Republicans carried war to Afghanistan and Iraq, with the Democrats holding up the flag, passing the ammunition, and saluting. Failed parties, failed states. What do you do with a failed state? You start over. Reform is not the answer. Reform is what you do to make something work. Do we want to make the system we have work? Well, think about who it works for. It works for the corporations, the military, the wealthy, the politicians. It does not work for the people of the United States at large, certainly not for working people and the poor. Above all, it does not work for black people. The alternative to reform is reconstruction. Sometimes you rehab, sometimes you have to tear down and start over, build better. We need to start over. We need to start now. We need a new radical political movement to do it, one prepared to reject reform for the total reconstruction of our society. A real reconstruction of our society would start with the poor people of New Orleans, with their needs. They and all who are like them should come first. If we make a society where they can live and thrive, then we all will. And that's an article by Dan L. Botts, who teaches history and Latin American studies at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. He edits Mexican Labor News and Analysis and is the author of several books on labor in Mexico, Indonesia, and the U.S. And you can read his story online at the Counterpunch website. It's called The U.S. Needs to Start Over, Failing at War, Peace, and Dignity. Any comments, Thomas?
My comment is that this, like I said, with regards to New Orleans, that New Orleans is the ideological epitome of conservative right-wing ideology. This is the goal of the right wingers. They want a failed state. They want to destroy the ability of the government to do anything, to respond to human needs. And just is, you know, this is the result. We're seeing it like writ large. And hopefully people will wake up and realize that and react, and, you know, the most minimal way that they can react is like by a changing of the guard in the government in 2006, but hopefully more.
Sounds like reform rather than reconstruction you're favoring there.
That's what I said, the least you can do.
Right. Here's a story from Al Jazeera. New Orleans begins gathering bodies with the last weary... This is just sort of to keep you the most recent thing coming off the news line that I've noticed. With the last weary refugees rescued from the Superdome and the Convention Center, New Orleans on Sunday turns its attention to gathering and counting the dead. No one knows how many people were killed by Hurricane Katrina and how many more died waiting to be rescued, but the bodies are everywhere, hidden in attics, floating in the ruined city, crumpled in wheelchairs, abandoned on highways. I think it's evident it's in the thousands, Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt said on Sunday. One of your relatives, perhaps?
No.
Probably not. On CNN, echoing predictions by city and state officials last week about the death toll. Craig Vandervagen, Rear Admiral of the U.S. Public Health Service, said one morgue at a St. Gabriel prison expected 1,000 to 2,000 bodies. We need to prepare the country for what's coming, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said on Fox News Sunday. We're going to uncover people who died, maybe hiding in houses, got caught by the flood. It's going to be as ugly a scene as I think you can imagine. On Sunday morning, a woman's body remained lying on the corner of Jackson Avenue and Magazine Street, a business area in the lower Garden District with antique shops on the edge of blighted housing.
There should be an ugly scene in front of the White House and wherever the president and his bureaucrats go.
Or wherever, I guess, any Democrats who voted to defund this levy go as well. I don't know.
Hillary Clinton, John Kerry. The establishment needs to understand that the American people are not happy with their performance. They need to fear. That's the only way that change happens, is when the people on the bottom organize and collectively threaten to overthrow the established order.
Overthrow? Are you calling for the violent overthrow of the government by force and violence? That's a violation of the Smith Act, if I'm mistaken.
Non-violent overthrow of the
government. You're going to throw flowers at them, Thomas? Is that the idea?
Well, if they can't move, they can't conduct their business normally, if the entire economy of the United States is paralyzed as a result of mass action by the people, none of that.
Sort of syndicalist, anarchist, union strikes, things of that sort.
Yeah, boycotts. I guess they fall into the anarcho-syndicalist range of the spectrum.
Boy, foreigners, they think they can tell us what to do. Actually, you're not a foreigner, though, are you, Thomas? You are.
Actually, I have to go back 5 generations before I find a single immigrant in my ancestry.
It's disgusting.
Unusual for California.
We have a caller here. Hi there, caller.
Hi. I wanted to add to Thomas's comment here.
Go ahead.
It shouldn't take violence. If you look at the level of absence and incompetence of the emergency management systems in this country, especially federal, all you have to do is ignore spending. I don't think that would be called violence. That's all I want to say.
Thank you.
Bye.
So, just a quick note about Thursday's show. On Thursday, there's going to be 3 guests calling in from Los Angeles. They will all be concerned with psychiatric abuses, and I've actually already posted the kind of a little notice about it on Indie Media for those of you who don't boycott Indie Media. And I know some people do because they're concerned about censorship there. I don't, but I always raise the issue when I talk about it. Activist Becky Johnson is still blocked from posting homeless issues on Indie Media, posting anything on Indie Media, as far as I know. An outrageous decision on their part. There is, however, going to be this, and I appreciate Indie Media's putting it up there, or my having the access to Indie Media to put it up there. 3 Southern California advocates will be attacking psychiatric abuse Thursday on this show. We're going to be talking with Jeff Lustman, Mona Montgomery, and Ned Parker. Lussman's a part-time attorney who's done pro bono advocacy in the mental health system and is representing someone who was locked up improperly in a psych ward. He also works with mindfreedom.org. Montgomery is a Glendale attorney who specializes in conservatorship and mental health law. And Parker is a member of the Citizens Commission on Human Rights and has seen a lot of improprieties in the mental health system. They have a lawsuit going against a doctor in the hospital that falsely imprisoned a patient. And we're going to be talking to the three of them. Recently, Chris Bozda, a homeless activist, was arrested by police as he distributed his business card and announced his platform in the race for county supervisor and federal rep down on Pacific Avenue, as I mentioned earlier. He was forcibly medicated in jail and faces charges of disturbing the peace. So, thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You can reach me off-air on the Huff line. It's a voicemail, but I will return your calls. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can get more information about homeless issues on the Huff website. Hopefully the letter from Rotkin will be posted shortly, and the letter going to Rotkin will be posted. And you can read the mayor's latest public statements. You may not be able to figure out where he's going to have a public meeting, but you'll be able to read his public statement here on this one. And you can check that out at huffsantacruz.org. You can also access this show, and you can hear it again. It's archived there, as well as earlier shows. And hopefully soon there will be an index of shows which will be listed there, so you'll be able to tell what you're actually listening to. That would be a great thing to have. And you can also join me on Thursday, if you'd like, between 6 and 8. We'll not only talk psychiatric, how to deal with psychiatry and forced incarceration, forced drugging, how some people are dealing with it anyway. We'll talk about whatever has come up since then. Thomas, thank you for joining me for this four-hour show.
Thank you.
And thank you all out there for being a part of the show, for listening in, and for participating. Now participate more, and let's see what we can do, both in, you know, relief efforts for Katrina people and relief efforts for people in Santa Cruz. And you need real change. I'm afraid charity is not going to be the answer here. Thanks.
Jim Lehrer. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, I moderated the first presidential debate. But because this has been an extremely contentious election year, in order to lighten the mood, I am here tonight to moderate a joke-telling contest between the two candidates. So now let's bring them out, President George W. Bush and Senator John Kerry. Welcome, gentlemen. In order to keep things fair, we've allotted each candidate 90 seconds to tell the same joke. Your joke will be, why did the chicken cross the road? Let's lay out a few ground rules, shall we? The candidates will refrain from pointing fingers at each other or throwing things. No spitballs, no animal noises. The candidates will remain clothed for the entire joke. The candidates will not resort to names like Jughead, Dimwit, or Fatty Fatty 2x4. The candidates will keep their arms and legs inside the podium at all times. So now, based on a coin toss, we'll start with Senator Kerry. Senator Kerry, why did the chicken cross the road?
First, let me say how very excited I am to be here this evening. My face is absolutely drooping with joy. And have I mentioned that Dick Cheney's daughter is a lesbian? But let me get to your question, because I've had one position on this chicken the entire time. Did the chicken cross the road? Yes. Did he get to the other side? No. Do we know why he crossed the road? Yes. Do we know why he did not make it to the other side? No. I can't be much clearer than that.
All right, President Bush.
Well... I heard it, and you heard it. My opponent just said wrong chicken, wrong road, wrong time. Now, if you're going to tell a joke about a chicken, you can't talk like that. I mean, how do you think that makes a chicken feel? I think America needs to be tough on chickens. America needs to bomb these chickens. Otherwise, next thing you know, a chicken is strapping an egg to its back, lighting a fuse, and the yolk's on you.
Senator Kerry, a 30-second rebuttal.
Dick Cheney's daughter is a lesbian.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jim Lehrer, and the winner of tonight's debate, anyone with a remote control. Thank you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the cultural portion of our program. Please welcome to the stage world-renowned tenor Luciano Habibiscotti.
When I saw Kerry with his head so scary, I mean it's enormous and very hairy, I said, I love you just because you're not W. But I confess, so one guy could mess things up. Go home, Ralph Nader. You bring us down. Your suits, they're wrinkled. Your shoes, they're brown. And then John Kerry won't work so hard. He'll put our debt on his wife's a gold card. I have suspicions. Kerry's views, they are tilting. He takes more positions than Paris Hilton. A drab beige color. He's Al Gore, just a dollar. But though he's a tree, well, at least he's no bush. So get lost, Ralph Nader, with your big ears. You need a new suit, so go back to Sears. And though Ralph Nader's a liberal man, who's glad he's running Republican.